Okay, let's start the show.
It's November 21st, 2012. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, Norman Chan.
Hello.
How are you doing, Mr. Chan?
It's quite quiet in this room.
It's usually really quiet in here because there's usually like three or four people here.
And now there's only three.
And we're all sitting here talking to you. Gary Whittam.
Hello.
Happy day before Thanksgiving, sir.
Yes, I'm very much in the holiday mood. You can kind of tell it's the holidays starting around here. Everyone's already cleared out, right?
I got street parking that was free today.
Love it.
Yeah,
this is my favorite time of the year.
The Thanksgiving, well, all Christmas of it,
but everything from now up until it starts Halloween.
Okay,
because I love that. I think I've talked about this before. I love that all three of those holidays just kind of Halloween the rolls trifecta. Into Thanksgiving,
back to
rolls
back to
into
back.
Christmas.
But yeah. Gives you enough time in between to rest, recuperate, and then prepare.
I just love it all. I love this whole 2 month window.
Thanksgiving is my favorite. I love Thanksgiving because I love.
But then you also hate New Year.
I don't hate it. I just don't care about it.
Oh, so once you're done with Christmas, that's it. Then you go to hibernation.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I like the fact that you're still kind of technically off. You don't have to go back to work yet, but like New Year's is not. New Year's is a thing for young people.
We're young people.
Not in a few months.
Oh, boy.
We're really not.
I just love Thanksgiving because it's the time where you do whatever you do the thing you want, right? You want to eat turkey and you want to eat stuffing and you want to eat gravy and you want to sit and watch the Lions get the shit kicked out of them on Thursday afternoon.
It's very American.
Yeah.
It's the greatest of American holidays.
And of course, you know, an opportunity to be thankful.
Yeah.
wait, what? No. It's an opportunity to indulge in all your indulgences.
The only thing that annoys me about Thanksgiving is that it's followed immediately by Black Friday, which is, I think,
they've overlapped. I mean, it's outrageous what's happening.
It started already.
I'm boycotting companies that make their people come in on Thursday.
Mike Krahulik from Penny Arcade has posted about this in the last week. I don't know if you saw that, but he used to be a store clerk.
Yeah.
And he used to work those holidays.
Yeah, it's horrible.
And my attitude, when I first, people are complaining, oh my God, it's terrible now Black Friday goes into Thanksgiving and, you know, people are just leaving immediately after Thanksgiving dinner or even boycotting it altogether, just go stand in line for a cheap,
that's,
you know, stereo or
crazy
something. And my attitude initially was like, but you know, if you don't want to do that, don't do it. Like, people want to, that's their choice, but it's not the choice for retail employees.
Yeah,
they get stuck with this, this stuff.
And those kids, the kids of those assholes that are camped out in front of Best Buy right now and are going to be eating turkey from a can tomorrow morning. I mean, that's real sad.
Yeah,
you're like. And the thing is, the deals aren't even that good.
Look,
the retailers have wised up to Black Friday. You're getting LG class TVs. You're not getting an LG 55-inch TV.
Yeah, I mean, look,
for $400.
The ship has sailed on consumerism taking over the holidays. It is what it is. We get that. But it is now getting to a point where
are you also offended by people who wait in line for Thanksgiving turkeys?
No, that's a little different.
Because those are things that people actually really need.
Okay,
but.
And we invite needy and homeless people into our house for Thanksgiving.
I think that a lot of people, aside from the people who door busting, their deal.
Well, the most
had.
Yes, yeah. But at what cost?
But the door,
you don't need to door bust.
The most depressing thing, from as much as I like the holidays, those videos that come out on Friday and Saturday of people getting trampled and. And it really is like the end of the world.
Well,
you'd think that the president had just gone on TV and said, ladies and gentlemen, the world will be ending in 30 minutes.
It's the mist.
As opposed to, ladies and gentlemen, you can get $20 off this product that you otherwise would not have had much interest in.
So the thing I always wonder is if the retail dudes that are working at the front door at Target or Best Buy or whatever, if one of them, if they have to draw straws to see who goes up and does the unlocking. Because you know they unlock it, and the moment that lock clicks, it's just a fucking
there must be
crazy
a better
push.
System.
Of course.
There must be a better system of like a barricade or some type of gate mechanism that you can.
It really, I mean, we joke about it, but it really does depress me. I mean,
it is. It's
to
terrible.
Be clear, I have waited in lines for products before.
Yes, but
I waited in lines for Android tablets, iPhones.
I waited in line
iPads.
For the Wii, for iPhones, but in an orderly line. I don't mind waiting in line. It's the stampede that is
I'm offended by the waiting in line too, but.
But that's at least that's civilized. There's a system,
And
it's very English of you.
I think most of us have sworn off the hunt for Black Friday deals.
Well, I'm doing,
but there are every year it inevitably comes up where.
But this is why I like
a week later.
But this is why the internet part of it's so great. Not just Cyber Monday. I mean, Amazon's already started. Like, I got a link the other day.
Don't say Cyber Monday.
Cyber Monday. I've been very interested in this show Homeland, but I don't have Showtime, and there's no way for me to get it. But here's the Blu-ray, and the Blu-ray has been very expensive, but it was marked down to like some ridiculously like 70% off.
Ooh, is that still on?
Click. And now I feel like I've participated in the holiday bargain season.
Well.
But I don't need to sacrifice my dignity to get there.
Reach the black.
So we're...
Get out of the red.
What are you talking about?
No, that's Black Friday. It's because it's when retailers and the balance sheets get into the black and not out of the red.
That's not really true, though.
That's why it's called Black Friday.
No,
it's called Black Friday because it's a terrible, terrible day. It's a dark day.
No.
If they operated for 11 months a year without making a profit, do you think that there's a single retail location that would be open in the United States
today? The term Black Friday started as kind of like an ironic joke, and it's just stuck. It's now been adopted.
I got this up.
Macy's like say, like, come Tuesday. To Black Friday.
I always thought that Black Friday was the beginning of the season when people and retailers get to sell all inventory.
I think it started with like it was associated with stock market crashes. Right?
Yeah, it's a reference to Black Tuesday,
like Black Plague,
1919 stock market crash.
Yeah,
origin of the term. Okay. Wow, lots of context.
Let's watch as Norm drops some knowledge on Norm here.
Nothing. There's nothing better than watching someone read a Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
Except listening to someone read a Wikipedia
yeah,
page.
Yeah, I want to get this right.
No, it's called Black Friday because it's awful.
Yeah.
That's why.
You thought
it was about getting in the black?
Yeah.
No.
This is one of those things. Sometimes Norm gets things a little wrong.
This is like homogenous milk.
Yeah. It all comes from one cow. It's single origin.
Yeah.
It's
associated with the financial crisis of 1869.
There you go.
In 19th century. Wow.
I'm actually in the market for Black Friday deals this year for the first time in a really long
time. Internet deals, though.
Because I've got a bunch of baby shit to buy. And it turns out most baby stuff never goes on sale, but Black Friday is the one exception.
You know, if you put Gina's due date into like the Amazon system or whatever, in the final month you get discounts on everything.
Really?
You have to do that.
Pro tip.
Yeah.
Well, we just did the Amazon registry the other day.
Okay, so make sure you put in her due date because in the last 30 days you'll see the price. They'll start dropping prices.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
So then, why would you buy anything early?
You don't. You wait for the last 30 days and then you get it.
Secrets dropped on This Is Only a Test.
Yeah, you do need to buy a lot of baby stuff, and this is a good opportunity to get stuff. Are there baby deals to be had?
There are dope baby deals, mostly on the high dollar items. So stuff like the stroller and car seats and all that.
You want to be making those savings.
Yeah.
I read more of the Wikipedia page underneath
Norm's
the origin of the term.
Is causing his
there was an accounting practice. Many merchants objected to the negative use of the term to refer to one of the most important shopping days of the year. By the early 1980s, an alternative theory, 80s when I was born, so this is the theory I was raised
justifying with.
An alternative theory began to be circulated
that retailers traditionally operated at a financial loss for most of the year and made their profit during the holiday season.
Then why stay open for the rest of the year? If they're not making money for the first 11 months of the year,
a lot of companies
fucking close the doors.
Like, that's like being a Christmas tree lot that stays open all year round.
Yeah, I'm going to open my 365-day Christmas tree
lot. A lot of companies don't actually make
–
they have operating losses, but they still operate.
I understand.
That's the idea.
This is a good reason you're a journalist and not in business. Yeah.
Anyway,
a lot of companies.
So, but I mean, even on the internet, like when Amazon has those gold box things that are only open for like an hour or whatever, you still have to. I mean, it's not as undignified as trampling.
You have to refresh
to death,
a lot,
but you're hammering away on that mouse click to get those deals before they all run out.
You don't want those deals that are limited time or like random time. Like the worst thing.
But Amazon's good about it because they will advertise the schedule for the day. They'll say if you want this at this price, come back at like 2 p.m.
Yes, at two random times throughout the weekend. Keep on checking, and you might let you save an extra couple $100.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about tech stories. We'll talk about Thanksgiving later, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, Black Friday is, in a way, is
it's
a tech
the biggest
story. Because electronics and gadgets, I mean, that's a big part of...
It's
where those things
are
sold.
You know, it's not actually the biggest shopping day of the year. It's the biggest shopping of the day of the year so far. The biggest shopping day of the year is the Saturday before Christmas. Always.
Right, because people are getting last
minute
gifts.
It's the last minute gifts day.
Is that in quantity or item
sold
or
dollar? Is the only thing that matters, I think.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but basically, pretty much any, as we discovered the other day, any time from like last weekend to now,
yeah,
any kind of high shopping area like a mall or like a downtown shopping like Union Square here in San Francisco, it all bets are off at this point.
Well,
it's ugly.
The people who do the statistical analysis on sale prices say that the best time to shop is actually the week after Thanksgiving or the week before Christmas. They're about roughly equivalent.
I kind of like it. I mean, I know it's a consumeristic thing, but it is part of what is now our modern holiday tradition. I like going downtown, getting a holiday spiced coffee beverage.
Oh God!
And
I'm glad that you called it a coffee flavored beverage.
Like, it's lame, but like when like Leah says to me the day, oh, Starbucks, the red cups are out at Starbucks, which is like it's another little harbinger of the holiday season.
They stopped the pumpkin spice lattes.
Did they?
They ceased.
I don't care about that. I like the gingerbread.
For the gingerbread latte.
The gingerbread is where it's at.
And the candy cane.
Just 2 short months ago, you were so excited about the pumpkin spice lattes, and already.
Yeah. No, not me.
Goodness.
I don't like pumpkin.
You don't like pumpkin?
I don't like
pumpkin,
pumpkin
pie?
Flavor. I like gingerbread flavor.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. And I don't like pumpkin pie.
Oh,
I don't like cranberry sauce either.
What?
What are you going to do about it?
Maybe this is one of like peanut butter.
Pecan pie.
I'm not making any pecan pies.
Pecan pie is great.
Pecan
pie. You didn't give me
favorite.
This information in time.
Are you making pumpkin pies?
Yeah, I make pies from scratch.
But are they just all pumpkin pies?
Pumpkin and apple.
I guess I'll have an apple. Okay. I like cherry pie and I like pecan pie. All kinds of chocolate cream pies and banana cream pies.
Well, those aren't really Thanksgiving either.
Well, Leah's making that Guinness chocolate cake, so I'll just eat that.
I thought she was making a stout cake for a minute there.
Stout.
It's a kind of weasel.
Autocorrect.
Goodness.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Should we get into some festive tech news?
Do people actually buy cars in the holidays?
I mean, you know, I think they must because there are so many like holiday car sales events. I can't wait for the first Lexus December to Remember event.
Oh, because the bow. You love the bow.
Yeah. For the super, super rich Romneys types of the world. Oh, hello, darling. Here's your Lexus for Christmas because I'm so fucking rich.
Otherwise, your family won't love you.
That's right.
I think washing machines and beds and everything, there's a time of year that the model year rolls over. And if you, like the reason holiday sales exist is because you want to hit that, right?
But when
that
do the new in the over? US? When do the new model years?
I don't
come
have any.
Out?
It used to be like
in
September.
The UK. It's like in the fall, but yeah, I don't know when it is.
Well,
here
the big
in the
car
US.
Days for like Labor Day, not July 4th, maybe July 4th.
But
July
they usually have separate holiday car lots. Usually have separate clearance events for right before the new models come
yes,
in, right?
Right.
So that's and that's not associated with the
holidays. Then they probably have something later where they want to run out the last of the old inventory, the last of last year's inventory. Like
right.
If they don't get rid of it when the new cars come in, they also want to like
yes.
I don't know. I feel like car dealerships probably have plenty of
it's hard. It's
to
hard
sales.
To imagine, you know, an iPad or a Wii U or something is one thing, but
that's
like
expensive.
It's hard. But like, how many people are really giving cars for gifts? Like that, you've got to
well,
be
new in cars, the, especially.
Yeah,
like you might give a 16-year-old a car.
You've got to be the 1% of the 1% to be doing that.
Don't
buy
Corollas and
don't give
even
a kid
then.
A new car. Never give a kid a new car.
No.
Like that's the only time car gifts are acceptable. I think
you're not going to give your kid a new car.
No, I'm not going to give my kid a car. I'm going to make my kid take the bus. Go to all
like a chud
kid. Yeah.
Oh.
Well, you got to learn how the chuds live.
Yeah, chain them to a tree too.
I'll give him an Uber account. Just in case.
Wow. Uber might not be around by then.
Well, you want to talk about that?
We won't talk about that. Last thing for shopping, Wirecutter is a really good article of things. The online Black Friday weekend, Cyber Monday deals that they would buy. And some of those things.
Is there a good resource for like where a one-stop resource
that's
where the deals
said.
Are? Wirecutter. Okay.
Wirecutter.
Well, not for deals, but for what to buy. So
I already know what I want to buy. I'm just looking for discounts.
Oh, there are sites that you don't
I don't need
visit.
To be told what to buy.
Fat Wallet and stuff like that. Well, the thing about Wirecutter that's good.
I can't go on those Fat Wallet slick deal sites. They depress me. Those people. I mean, it is like extreme 2% couponing.
2% cash back and
those,
1%.
The pores?
1%
rebate.
When
you say those people, is that what you mean? Am I going to have to bleep you again?
I love the idea of poor as a noun. Somebody, I said, there was some product that I wanted the other day, but I didn't want to go get it. It was a Wii U. I didn't want to have to go get one. And somebody said, just pay a poor to go do it for you. I'm like, that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
It is terrible.
But people
really
do
bad.
It.
Well, I mean, when we were in line for the iPad, the people in the front of the line were placeholders that had been paid to stay there.
Yeah,
all night.
I think that's disgusting.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. I mean, at least
I don't even like
jobs for America.
Occasionally when I fly someplace and there's like a guy waiting for me, you know, with my name on the card thing. Ooh. I won't even let them carry my bag because no. I'm comfortable with people doing things for me. I'm like, I got it. It's just
it's
a small
bag. It's not
like
bag. You roll heavy anyway. You have a no. you have a two.
But even if I have like a big suitcase, I don't. The idea of some other guy whose job it is just to carry my shit is just weird to me.
So in Gina's old job, we used to go places and she would have to check a whole bunch of bags that were like shit for whatever event she was going to. So in that case, we would let them haul the bag. But usually I carry my own bag.
I mean, when the bell guy at the hotel comes down with that big cart thing that you throw the bags onto, that's fair enough.
He gets a tip at the end that says, hey, in exchange for the time that you've spent, here's $20 or $10 or $2 a bag, whatever, $3 a bag.
I don't know what the
20 rolls of paper
is.
Towels for 20 bucks.
That's a buck a roll. It's a pretty good deal. Matt checks out. Wire cutters, the problem I have with Black Friday is you get in there and you've waited in line for so long and it's 4 o'clock in the morning and you're probably all hopped up on turkey and white wine still. So when you get into the store, at that point, you're just looking for deals and not looking for shit you actually
need. Are you speaking from experience here? You've never actually done this.
My father used to go when I was a kid.
Okay.
It wasn't as bad then.
You want a list of a hierarchy of things you
that's the thing.
Need See, slash want
so when people
slash
that's the thing
want.
When people the hardcore Black Friday guys, the people that are right there at the front of the door,
people
and
that are in line right now,
those people know what they want, right? They're not
they're
looking
for
deals.
They know what the deals are, they know exactly
what section they're going to, what products they're going to get, right? They've got a plan.
Therefore, they're there for the thing that is limit 2 per store,
right?
So you know, and that's fine. I got no beef with them. I think it's crazy to wait 4 days in line. But if you're the 20th person in line, well, I mean, I think they're crazy.
Okay.
But that's their choice and it's their life. And as long as they're not dragging their kids out, I don't give a shit. The problem is if you don't get the doorbuster, then you're walking around just looking for deals. And that's how you end up walking out with a margarita shop.
Yeah, with a thing that you never even wanted. Yeah,
exactly.
But it's 20% off.
Yeah. 20% off of a margarita bill is still a flaming piece of shit that you don't need.
Yeah. Is that the actual? Is that the actual
layaway?
Is that the official Jimmy Buffett licensed one?
Yeah,
there's
a South Park
about
that.
South Park episode about where we tried to return it.
They explained the debt crisis with Margaritavilles. If you've never seen that episode, it is definitely worth watching.
Okay, I'll be sure to check that out. No, I definitely stay to the internet side.
So I think we talked about the Romney tech team and the Orca thing.
Oh, did you talk? Oh, I'm bummed that I missed that because I found that fascinating. I would love to have talked about that.
We did not talk about it.
Oh, well, then let's do it.
Okay. I thought we talked about it.
Can I summarize it? Because
yeah, write it down.
I read a couple of stories about this. Obviously, Mitt Romney lost the election for many reasons.
He went to Disneyland this weekend or this past week. Yeah.
Disneyland's for winners.
I heard he went to see the new Twilight movie as well.
Well,
Disneyland is for winners.
Things you do when you don't have to run a country.
Mitt Romney, you've just spectacularly lost the election. What are you going to do next? I'm going to Disneyland.
I'm going to Disney.
It's good
Farm.
For his family.
I mean, look. That would cheer you up, right? I mean, I'm sure he's bummed.
He didn't look cheery.
You saw the photos?
Mitt Romney pumping gas. Also
you know,
not cheery.
Look, I don't like Mitt Romney, but I do. And it's a good thing for the country and for the world that he didn't win. But.
Oh, God.
But I'm not down with this laughing at pictures of him with his tousled hair or whatever. Let me tell you something, by the way. I would be glad to look like Mitt Romney at age 65. That guy looks fucking good for 65.
Well, if you have that kind of money, you should.
But
look
let me
good
tell
at
you
65.
Something. If I spent the last year of my life, the last 6 years of my life, being basically constantly having my hair and makeup done and being constantly putting your tie and you have to choose this tie and this tie's been focus tested and all that bullshit. And suddenly it's all over. Yeah, I'm putting on my fucking Superman sweatpants and pumping some gas. Who gives a shit?
Fair enough.
And then going to Disneyland.
Fair enough. And then going to Disneyland.
All right, so let's talk about the tech side of this. Ars Technica actually had a great Politico had a good story, but Ars Technica had a really detailed version of it, as you would expect.
And did you read the Atlantic one about what went wrong with Romney stuff?
What went right with Obama stuff?
Oh, that was the New York Times.
I read it all. I found it fascinating to decompose it's the holidays.
Yeah, Gary's already checked out.
Okay, so look, basically one of the I don't think it necessarily would have made much of a difference in the end, but it was a big story. One of the systems that Romney and the Romney campaign were saying was going to be a great boon to them on election day and would help them win the election was this very, very expensive proprietary get out the vote, voter on the ground organization system called ORCA.
Right. Obama had something similar in the 2000
called NARWHAL.
NARWHAL.
No, the current one is called NARWHAL. The 2012 one was called NARWHAL, and it was a system, and the ORCA is a natural predator of
right.
NARWHAL.
And so Romney, in a fit of hubris, said, oh, we're calling ours ORCA because orcas eat narwhals.
But the point of this is that they could pull in real-time exit poll data.
It was a huge custom piece of software.
Send people out on the streets
and people on the
to get people to go vote.
People whose job it was to monitor polls and get people to the polls and give them real-time information all had apps on a phone, and the data would come into the system, and they would have this amazing real-time fluid snapshot of what we need more people here, or we need to make sure these people are motivated, or whatever it was, so they could totally
data-driven election.
Maximize all their resources on election day.
And ORCA on the Romney side was an app similar to what Obama's team did in 2008.
Right.
But NARWHAL, which went
but for
Obama
various reasons, the whole system was an absolute catastrophe on election day. They hadn't properly tested it; hadn't been load tested. They hadn't probably been explained to volunteers. They were asking volunteers to print out a 60-page manual the night before the election. A lot of these volunteers are elderly. They don't know from apps. They don't know what's going on.
Right.
And then the system collapsed under the load. Their ISP at one point shut the whole system down because they thought the data coming in was a DDoS. People didn't the passwords and PIN codes didn't work for volunteers on the day. Basically, everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And so instead of having this incredibly well managed and micromanaged and efficient and communicative ground operation that was all being controlled from their HQ the way that the Obama organization had, Romney just had the fucking Three Stooges, Keystone Cops running around, not knowing what was going on. Absolute nightmare. And a lot of people that could have been better utilized just spent the whole day trying to access this app and getting frustrated. And imagine basically you know what it's like when an MMO comes out first day and the servers all go down, you can't get online, nothing's working.
But the beta works so well.
Yeah, it's basically that. Except they never even had a beta.
Well, so the interesting thing...
They didn't test it. They didn't stress test it.
The interesting thing that Andy pointed out, Andy is one of the top men, fabled and wise. He pointed out that Obama had actually hired a team.
And NARWHAL on Obama's side was not an app. It was completely different.
But the point is...
fighting apples with no.
By the way, ORCA on the client side, on the volunteer side, was a web app. So they had people going to the app store trying to find this app because they hadn't probably even told them how to get it. And it was actually just a web app.
Right. So the difference was, the main difference that Andy thought was that on one side, Obama hired the CTO from Threadless, who clearly understands how to build large-scale websites.
Right.
And then that guy hired a team of people from Twitter and all over big, smart internet folks.
Right.
Who quit their jobs, came to work for the Obama campaign for 13 months, and built this app.
Right.
Was it an app?
Okay. Build an application that...
Build the infrastructure.
Okay.
It was infrastructure.
Is it a thing that people use to do something?
That was like a small part of it.
Okay.
And that was the big the fundamental difference.
So explain then.
It was... I'm digging up right now, but the comparison is that Romney's team went for an app to manage resources.
And I think this is what
Obama went for a...
But the upshot is that
there is maybe a different, and it says something about the campaigns, right? The Obama campaign is kind of like the young, trendy campaign where they've got all these kind of like guys that actually get the internet and understand social media. And then you've got the Romney campaign, which is kind of saying like, oh, I guess we should have the apps and the interwebs on this campaign and not really understanding it at all.
That's a gross simplification because clearly they looked at what Obama did in 2008
right.
And said, look, they had good they were able to get people to come out, because the thing that everybody realized in 2008 was whether people were who people intended to vote for didn't mean anything if they didn't actually get out and vote,
right?
Like, so all the early polling and all that stuff is useless if it rains on the day in Ohio and voter turnout is 30%.
And you actually need, because this is what happens in those key areas, in like swing counties or whatever, they actually have people that will go and knock on your door. They'll show up with a fucking bus.
Right.
We'll take you to the polls. Like, they will fucking carry you there if they have to get your vote. And we don't see that here in California, where it's not necessarily that big a deal.
Well, we're never a swing state.
Right. I mean, for the local stuff, you know, it's still important. But like, yeah, if you live in like a swing county in like Ohio or Pennsylvania, yeah, there was probably someone knocking on your door on election day saying, let's go to the polls.
And then there were some other things in the Obama infrastructure that were really interesting. For example, they had a tool that you could dial into if you were an Obama supporter and would then let you be essentially a caller to call and run down a script with people who were in contested counties. Right. So you could call up and say, hey, just wanted to call and see what you were doing. Did blah, 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 blah. Yeah. I didn't ever actually see what the script was, but it was something you could, like, I mean, all of that stuff helped get people out.
In principle, you know, the idea these days, you do need to have organization. You can't just, you know, run your ads and hope that people will show up. You need a GOTV operation. Mm-hmm. And I think Romney, the campaign in principle, the idea behind it was all sound. It's just that they didn't test the software. It wasn't properly implemented and it melted down on the day.
Right.
We see this with every big launch. The problem is, it's not like with an MMO launch. It's like, oh, well, by the second week,
everything
will be up and running. It's like you have one day to get this right.
Yeah, it's so weird. You're hiring people who are typically working on, you know, several year schedules to create a product, whether it's a web service or a physical product, tech guys. But here, they're a small fraction of the big political machine, and all that matters is on the one day they help their guy
that it work. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's zero margin for error.
And if, exactly.
And even if you work at 100%, you still might not win. Yeah. But you just got to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it was just interesting. It wasn't like there was zero margin for error and they would like, it worked pretty good, but just not good enough. Like, it absolutely collapsed. And again, go to the Ars Technica. I guess if you go to Ars Technica and type in like the Romney as a keyword, the article will come up.
Yeah, the Atlantic
it's a fascinating,
one.
Not just, it's, you know, as, it's not even a political story. It's just a classic example, a really interesting case study in how a system, if not properly tested, can technology can help you, but can also destroy you if you don't properly, you know, test it and get it working right. So it's an interesting story.
Do you want to talk about 4K TVs?
Well, this why is that a tie into what you had in the news for TV manufacturers are fucked. I don't know why you got rid of that.
Well, because I thought that I you know,
okay, TV manufacturers are fucked.
It seems like.
Okay.
Sales across the board for TV manufacturers are down.
Mm-hmm.
They it's something we talked about a long time ago, right? The HD upgrade followed by the rise of flat panels gave an opportunity to sell a lot of TVs in
a
relatively short period of time.
What are you going to do?
Right. And then everybody buys 40 and 50 inch TVs, and most people don't have room for more than one 40 or 50 inch TV in their home.
Most people.
I know what you're thinking. You're already thinking, it's been 2 years. It's almost time for another TV.
No, I'm not thinking that at all. I mean, my TV is so ridiculous that
it's really big.
Yeah.
Looking back, she's gotten the non-3D model.
Well, no.
They didn't make his size in non-3D.
But
it's still a good,
There was no non-3D?
TV. But the 3D was a whatever premium I paid for the 3D was a total waste of money.
Right. Well, the point is, I played a little bit of 3D with Black Ops 2. It wasn't worth setting up.
No.
Nope.
So Sony is in the effort to kickstart the 4K thing. It seems like, I mean, this is my theory, in the effort to kickstart 4K, where the sets are starting at what, like $25,000.
Well, that one that I saw at the Sony store in New York was $25,000.
Yeah. So whether you buy a set or a 4K projector, it seems like it's going to be $20,000 or $25,000. Sony is giving free 4K movies to anybody who buys those TVs.
Like in what format?
From Sony ass Sony's proprietary.
Is that going to be on a disc? Is that
I assume
a,
it'll
a
be
Blu-ray?
Be delivered digitally. I don't know.
Isn't
don't
it called like? It's called.
They have not.
They put a name on it. It's called like Blu-ray Ultra or something.
It may just be using a Blu-ray disc and better compression, and using a, like all 50 gigs on.
So
a
when
Blu-ray
they say
disc.
They're giving you free movies, what does that mean exactly?
That means they are sending you 4K versions of Sony Pictures movies.
Like what? Like forever?
No.
It's limited bundle.
Yeah.
So instead of giving you a demo disc where you get a sizzle reel,
a Spider-Man 2 trailer,
you get a couple movies.
I mean, but again, if I'm not going to spend $20,000 on a 4K TV, the thing that's going to flip me over is not like a half a dozen movies.
You don't say.
Like, upgrade my entire Blu-ray collection to Blu-ray Mega Extreme or whatever it's called. And
somehow
maybe
all
we'll
my
talk.
Cable shows are not only 720p
but
or 1080i,
but it all comes down to content,
now 4K.
And there's no content. I actually wish when I went down to this, when I was at that Madison Avenue store, on a Fifth Avenue store, I was looking at that. There was no one there in the little room where they had the 4K TV running. I wish there had been a Sony person there because I wanted to say to them, look, assuming I would want to buy this, what is there for me to watch on it? Because I would honestly like to know what their answer is.
Well, so the thing that we saw at CES last year when we saw the first kind of real – I mean, we'd seen 4K TVs before, but this last year was the first time that there were real products, not just tech demos.
Yeah.
The scalers that they're running with 4K, upscaling Blu-ray from 1080p, are like, we have a perception that scalers are bad because of the 480, because last time we saw them, they were trying to upscale 480p to 720p or 1080. And I think that when you have more data to start with, the results are dramatically better. So with the higher resolution Blu-ray discs, they upscale really well. I think, and I could be wrong, but I think if you sat next to upscaled 4K, upscaled 1080p and 4K, you would probably have a hard time noticing what the difference
is. Well,
one after the next.
I think I would have a hard time noticing difference between 4K and 1080p.
That's what I'm saying.
TV.
That 4K TV, though.
Regular 1080p.
I made the effort to go all the way down to that 4K TV.
If it's 1080p and it fills the screen, it's going to be upscaled.
I really wanted to see it. When I was in New York, there was a sign outside that said, come inside and see a 4K TV. I said, okay, great, I want to see one. Went all the way down, I kind of searched around, it had hidden way in the back, and I saw it, I was like, this just looks like 1080p to
me. I'm saying, there was a 60-inch TV that was just 1080p, and next to it was a 4K TV, a 60-inch 4K TV with running 4K content. Even side by side, yeah.
If you're standing 2 feet away, you can see the difference. If you're standing 10 feet away, less so.
Yeah, so why spend $25,000 or $20,000?
Well, the point is, in over a period of time, then those panels will get less expensive.
It makes more sense, I mean, because the TV I use not just for movies, but also games and also cable content.
But you don't have anything that can drive. You don't have anything that can drive games at 4K.
Exactly, or 1080p even. Games barely do 1080p.
Well,
it's all fake. And cable TV is 720, but with terrible compression already. Yeah. The only way 4K makes sense is if I'm buying a projector or something just for a room where the screen is big enough, 100 inches massive, right, where 4K would matter.
That's when you actually do want 4K. Like, you don't need retina resolution on a pixel
on a living room TV.
The reason all these manufacturers are fucked is because they're fucking themselves. They're trying to push these new technologies onto consumers too quickly. We're just now finally comfortably transitioned into HD. I think at this point we can say that we've crossed that
Rubicon. Blu-ray is the default.
Everyone, not everyone, but like HD is fully penetrated into the living room. A lot of people, HD TVs are really cheap now. But then 3D, they tried to push on people really quickly. App TVs. People didn't really want these technologies. Blu-ray TVs and smart TVs are still struggling to be in any way mainstream. Like 3D, like, nobody likes it.
Well, the thing is,
what about 4K? People aren't ready for this shit yet. The content isn't there. They just
TVs
got their new TV.
Unlike cars, TVs aren't things that people buy every year.
Well, you mean like cars?
Well,
they're big purchases.
For some reason, cars, even though they have new models every year, they incremental updates. They sell basically the same amount every year, and car companies can grow. Ford can say over year they have increase in sales. TV, not so much.
But that's because people have been buying cars for a long time. So the distribution of when people buy cars is going to be spread out.
There's always going to be a certain group of people that are ready to buy a new car.
I wonder if what happened.
Because TVs are for households. It's never the case.
I wonder if the problem is when the inflection points happen with the HD shift and the LCD, the rise of LCDs and plasmas, if that caused big humps. So now they've accidentally made TV sales cyclical instead of a kind of level curve.
I don't know, but it just feels to me like they're very greedy and impatient to have people constantly be buying new stuff. And that's a model that works for little gadgets that people like to upgrade every year, every couple of years.
And cost a couple $100.
But huge TVs, yeah. A good TV should be good for at least 5 or 6 years. And people have TVs in their houses for decades.
How long did the TV that we had when I was a kid was 15 years old when my parents finally bought a flat screen?
Yeah.
I mean, just 15 years old.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because they didn't watch TV. It was because it was good enough. It was 23 inches. It was a big TV.
Yeah. And TV is entertainment, while a car is something you may need to get to a job.
But most people don't buy a new car every other year either. Or even every – like TV – car upgrades are super duper incremental.
They change the trim
on the car. They change the headlight
shape. There's a whole secondary market for cars.
Yeah.
And not really a secondary market
for TVs. The problem with it is it's not like when they release a new car, they have to upgrade all the roads. And people are saying, well, I'm not going to buy this new car until the roads are ready for it. There is a whole chicken and egg thing with content as well. People aren't going to necessarily release the content until the hardware is there to support it, and people aren't going to buy the hardware until there's stuff to watch
on. Well, and there's a limited number of reasons there's a limited number of things that are worth upgrading your car for, right? Like for example, you bought your car the year before they started putting auxiliary in ports on that car,
mm-hmm. yep.
but you'd never upgrade. Like that is a hassle every day.
Yep.
But it's not something you would ever ditch your car and get the new one for because it's a massive expense.
No, it's a 10-year car.
A huge pain in the ass.
At least.
Yeah. So yeah, TV just, manufacturers
just,
are fucked.
Just wait till Apple releases a TV, then
May,
the annual
March.
So we annual upgrade cycle.
We have heard from multiple sources who may or may not be in the know. March.
Yeah, I still don't think it's a TV.
I don't.
Like, you don't think there's an actual panel?
No, I don't.
I think it's a small box that you put. I don't think that.
I think it's a box that has a radically different approach to content, but it's a box.
The thing to me about doing a TV is it's a massive product line if you do a TV, because you have to scale from 24 inches up to 60 or 65 inches.
One TV, their optimal size is...
What, like 36, 40 inches?
42 inches or something, where they can say that will fit into a living room of an apartment or a house or a bedroom.
If it's a panel, they'll at least do two different sizes. Same way they do different sizes of everything.
Sure, two different sizes.
There's two different sizes of iPad, different sizes of MacBooks, different sizes of iMac.
For their panels, they don't make the panels themselves. They source from LG and Sharp. And, right. And if they went into the TV, I think those companies would be very happy, because then their panels...
Yeah, it's worked out for Samsung with memory and CPUs, right?
Yeah, well, they don't sell memory directly to
I don't think it
customers.
Makes... I don't think it makes sense. Again, the problem is if they do a TV, a lot of people are going to say, well, I already have a TV, whereas a box that plugs into your existing TV makes a lot more sense.
I mean, on the other hand, the TV market is real soft right now. The TV manufacturers are fucked, and Apple has had a pretty good history of coming into markets where that are soft. Like, the MP3 player market was starting to kind of cave in when Apple announced the iPad and launched the iPad, the iPod. So
we'll see. It's the great unknown for Apple. There's so many different theories, and they're all radically different. It'll be interesting to see what they actually do. All we seem to know for sure is there is definitely some kind of TV,
the market,
big TV play coming.
The market for a box is much better than the market for a TV.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The way to get consumers adopting is fast. You'll get faster adoption with a box, which, if they want to build an ecosystem for apps and content, selling a $99 box is going to make a lot more sense than selling a $2,000 TV.
They make more money selling apps than they do selling iPads and iPhones?
I don't think so. I bet their margins on iPads pretty good at this point. If they don't get apps on the TV, if they don't have enough of an ecosystem to get the apps on the TV, then the thing's going to fail. I mean, that's the long and short of it. So, and since the content providers are really hinky with them anyway, just because they don't want Apple controlling the...
Well, the reason why I think it's taking so long is what's going on behind the scenes is Apple is busily and secretly making huge content deals with a lot of people.
Yeah, with people who probably don't want to make huge content deals with Apple right now,
right?
Frankly. The interesting thing is doing the iPad launch in the fall leaves a big gap in the schedule for March, where there previously was an iPad event. So
yeah.
maybe the March rumors.
Maybe that becomes their TV event.
Intel CEO is retiring. Ottolini is out.
Okay.
He's 62 years old.
All right.
What does that mean for Intel? Why was he ousted, or is he just...
No, he's just retiring.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
He had a good run.
Sure, he has a very nice retirement package.
Well, how many CEOs has Intel? Intel hasn't had that many CEOs in the course of its history.
I just remember Andy Grove.
Right. Andy Grove for a long time. Before him, Gordon Moore. Was he the CEO or was he just the CTO? I can't remember.
Moore was the founder.
It's a big story because Intel still makes an incredible amount of silicon. But Intel seems to have a pretty well developed and their roadmaps go usually about 10 or 15 years out. The public ones go 8 to 10 years out, and I'm sure their internal ones go a lot further out.
Did you see that thing about HP having to write off billions of dollars through ridiculous investments?
Yeah, we weren't going to talk about that, but
Meg Whitman was on the radio yesterday, and she was very, very defensive about HP.
Well, she was on the reason she's defensive, she wasn't the CEO when that happened.
She was on the board.
Allegiant? No. What's the name of the company?
Autonomy.
She was on the board, so she did approve it. I think HP, the apothecary years at HP are going to be the thing that destroy that company.
Oh yeah, I mean it's like the Gilamelio years at Apple, only worse.
Yeah, I something needs to happen there dramatically, because they've kind of whiffed on. We haven't seen any products from them really. We've seen a handful of products on Windows 8, but nothing exciting. And for a while, it looked like they were going to kind of take on Apple with interesting design and
that's just on the consumer side.
I think they make good products. They still are a bit rudderless, it seems like.
Well, it's like they're not as rudderless as, say, Dell, which has become the Walmart shit show of PC vendors.
Yeah.
But yeah, then they're not able to compete with on price with Acer and those guys. So
Dell's
so like,
not
what's
a good
their gap?
Not a good way to buy a PC anymore.
We haven't tested PCs in a long time, so I don't know. But I don't know anybody who's excited about buying Dells.
Dude, you're getting a Dell. Remember that?
Ooh. Those are good old days. Nokia Here for iOS is out. Has anybody installed it?
Nobody oh, is it? It? Yeah. I saw some buzz around that as like a good map thing.
It's fast.
I'll be more interested to see Google Maps in its new format come back, because that's pretty soon, it seems like.
The initial test, the 5 minutes that I spent with it yesterday while I was waiting for something else, were not super impressive.
How do you have it?
I downloaded it on iOS.
Oh, is it out?
Yeah, that's
I
we'll
just
started this conversation with
Nokia Here for iOS.
I'm talking about Google Maps.
Google Maps is not out.
Yeah, but it is coming back.
It's imminent.
Yeah.
It's in the queue for approval is the word on the street.
Yeah. What does the Here thing have to offer?
So Nokia, we talked about this a little bit last week, but Nokia basically has a ton of map data from years and years of phones, bunches of other stuff. And apparently inside the halls of Nokia in Finland, they have long felt that they should have created something similar to Twitter, like an SMS-based social network, because they had they had access to millions and millions of handsets, could have made that happen.
Right.
So they want to make a similar kind of collaborative social maps platform. And that's what Nokia Here is. But by all reports, it's not. Like I said, my initial impressions weren't real positive.
Okay.
And
yeah, I think Google Maps is going to be the much bigger story.
You know what I like about it?
Google Here? Nokia Here?
You can't twist it. Always oriented north is up.
You do like that or don't like that?
I do not like that.
I don't find that offensive either way. Can't you rotate your phone?
I suppose.
No one doesn't have to do that.
No, I want to twist my fingers.
Look,
touch of the future.
This is, oh my God, that's so hard. Oh, my wrist. I just rotated my phone 90 degrees. Ugh. You could orient yourself to face north. That would be the easy solution.
I suppose.
It should follow the way you're walking. That's the upshot. Microsoft knew that the Kin would fail. This is super.
Everybody knew that the Kin would fail.
Before they announced it, before they released it, though.
Doesn't surprise me.
From this week.
This is interesting.
Yeah, that basically show, I think it's 3 or 5 or something, people testing different things, and one is going too fast for the UI to keep up. One says this UI lag would cause me to make a lot of mistakes.
Didn't they have like a huge party at the Microsoft campus after a launch of Kin? Huge celebratory, this is awesome.
Well, because at some point you're so pot committed, you kind of just got to like shit it out and just wait for it to go away.
So you're sitting on.
Well, it's
on
like
the porcelain.
At some like you know when you like there, there
like,
is a point.
There's no way for it to turtle
there,
back
yeah,
in.
Yeah, exactly. There is a point when you're having a shit where you cross a point of no.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
I can't suck it back up into my sphincter. It's got to come out, and they were clearly at that point.
All right.
Cool story.
Yeah.
I wonder if Verizon's going to sue them. Because Verizon is the one. I mean, Verizon was the launch partner for the Kin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they were the ones who probably got burned as much as Microsoft did on that product.
God,
and
what
I mean,
terrible, terrible embarrassment that was for everyone associated with it.
Yeah, I mean, the videos leaked said if I paid money for this, I would return it, you know, blah, blah, blah. It was real bad. It was the kind of thing you'd expect to see from something much earlier than that looked
so
like.
They knew it was a lemon they even as they were announcing it.
And
oh,
I've got to
read that
it.
Story, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Casey Johnson wrote something on ours or some other stuff too. Oprah also, we have seen behind the curtain on Oprah's My Favorite Things.
Yeah,
and I think that it is product placement more so now than ever before.
Wow, what are on her list of favorite things?
Well,
I wonder if any of those align with mine.
So she's given away Lexuses before, and
Toyota. I'm sure there is.
I feel
some
like she
overlap.
Gave away a car.
I'm sure there is
a
some
car.
Cars to everyone
Everybody
in the audience.
That wasn't a Lexus. No way. That was like
no,
a Pontiac.
No, it was. Yeah, it was like a Pontiac G5 or something.
Okay, well, whatever. Still,
but
fucking car is a car.
I imagine that a lot of her favorite things are things that she does actually like. I also imagine that some of her favorite things are things that she's been paid a lot of money to see.
Right, and probably the things that she's paid a lot of money to be favorite are also the things that.
But when you tweet about how much you like the Microsoft Surface and you tweet it from your iPad,
yeah.
That is a problem.
Well, so is that, do you think she actually, like, part of let's say she was paid to say that she like put Microsoft
like Jessica Alba
things, except less overt and not in the ads. Do you think that part of that deal is that she actually herself has to tweet it?
No.
From account or I some think, PR so some
here's
marketing
the thing.
Person.
I think there's probably multiple levels of deal. One is that you will stand up on a stage in front of people and say, this is awesome.
And that's her commitment. She has to read the brief about the Surface and say the thing on the stage.
Right. One is that you will make it your favorite thing. And then a whole level higher is you will be seen in public using this thing. I bet that those are I bet there's contractual levels of mad craziness between
those
two extremes.
I'm guessing that she tweeted it herself because a lot of celebrities don't manage their own Twitter accounts and they do have social media teams that run all that shit for them. But a real social media team would know that when you tweet something, people can tell what device it's been tweeted from.
You might think that.
You would think that. From our experience, no.
It happens all the time. The missed tweets, whoever the social, so there are several people I've seen on the internet that very clearly tweet their own tweets. Alton Brown runs his own Twitter account because he writes little notes and responds to people.
Right.
It's a very funny Twitter account.
Right.
Anderson Cooper.
Twitter legend.
Right. Calling out people for chocolate custard or something.
Coconut flan.
And eating Fritos. 50% right there. But yeah, there's a ton of celebrities, and I think Jessica Alba's and Alyssa Milano clearly is somewhat of a celebrity who tweets her own tweets.
Right. Charlie Sheen, for example, had people tweeting for him.
That was probably for the best.
That was all set up and managed, and there are people that just
I was looking for the example of that. And I think that the people who run that stuff, the self-proclaimed Twitter experts, are sometimes not Twitter experts.
Yeah, so really it's tough to differentiate because there's the parody account of not William Shatner, but Jack Nicholson, who couldn't use Twitter. Mm-hmm. It was very difficult for Jack Nicholson to use Twitter.
He's an old dude.
Well, have you seen that parody account? It was really funny. It was as if he was put in front of a computer. He's like, how do I change egg? I don't like egg because the default picture is the egg.
Oh, I see. That's good.
Jim, how do I change egg? Typing it in. I figure this out. And then the reply thing.
So your contention is that Oprah had – that one of her social media people tweeted this, but
– it's bad either way. Like the thing I want to believe is that Oprah is sitting there saying, oh shit, I got to make this Surface tweet. Let me do it. I'll just grab my iPad. Like she looks at both of them. She's sitting there at the table and the Surface is right here and the iPad's right here.
To be fair, there is no Twitter client for Surface.
No, there's Tweetro and MetroTweet, both of which are dog shit.
There's no Twitter.com official Twitter app for Windows 8.
Right. Everything that's available is a steaming pile of shit.
Did you see that the new Peter Sheeran? I think that's his name, who joined the board of directors of Twitter. This is
the ex-Fox guy?
The ex-MySpace guy. Yeah, the guy who ran MySpace, who was going to turn MySpace around. And MySpace supposedly is now going to be a Spotify competitor. That was leaked earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
But he announced his joining of the Twitter board of directors with an at Twitter message. So he wrote at Twitter. So no one saw it unless they were following him.
Right.
And Twitter.
So that's a super common mistake. That's like everybody makes that mistake at one point.
He joined the board of Twitter.
What I'm telling you
he's going to run. He's in charge of.
I'm not saying,
approving.
I'm not defending. I'm saying that is the most common Twitter mistake. You see that all the time.
You do see it all the time.
Because nobody knows if you add it, it's only the subset of people that follow.
So again, if you're going to be on the board of a company, you should probably know the basic rules about how your product works.
Guys, I love the optimism here, but I think that you dramatically overestimate the level of technical and product competence of most board members.
I always think a sign of someone putting a period before the person's name is a sign of someone who's Twitter competent.
I like the tilde instead of the period. It's a little more attractive.
Tilde? Okay.
Yeah.
No, the period is subtle.
That is kind of the de facto style.
That is. I'm pushing the tilt. I'm Don Quixote-ing up against the windmills.
Okay. All right. Ride that donkey.
What I was going to say is board members, in my experience, treat companies like they are spreadsheet games. Remember those old baseball sims that Dan Morris used to play?
Yeah, at the end of the day, if you've got someone like Peter Chernin who's making like big executive level decisions, he doesn't need to know every in and out of the product. He just needs to know the big picture.
Money coming in, money going out, potential money coming in that we're missing.
So the board, they're just numbers, accounting people. Reed Hastings was on the board of Microsoft and he just left and he sounded like he had some good insight.
Who's Reed Hastings?
He's Netflix CEO.
Oh, right.
He sounded like he had some good insight about Microsoft. He had some, unkind things.
Well, that's
to say
the other kind of board member. I would argue that there's probably two kinds.
Okay, so you're saying there's Morgan Freeman, and then there's What's his name? Rutger Hauer.
Who's Rutger Hauer?
Blade Runner and Batman Begins. Did you get the memo?
This analogy is going nowhere. I know what you're trying to do, but
there's Rutger Hauer, the numbers guy.
Yes,
and there's Morgan Freeman, the guy who understands the product. Yes,
I thought you were talking about Morgan Freeman, who has to come in and explain what's happening.
Too much South Park.
And I watched like three South Parks last night while I was doing other stuff.
But that Rutger Hauer.
I understand what
Morgan
you're saying.
Morgan Freeman.
I think we're off the rails here.
Yeah.
I would Inception noise, but I don't think we've earned that yet. Early Windows 8 mock-ups? I didn't read the story. Norm, what's going on with the early Windows 8 mock-ups?
There are some photos, again, on Ars Technica. Peter Bright had a story, and you can see screenshots of the early start screen and how messy it looked.
Let me see.
And actually, it seems like there's more photo, more information in these.
It's more
in these
color
tiles.
It's a wider color palette too.
And also, there's a time in the corner and stuff, and they obviously refined it to be more visually friendly. But it goes into this thing in Windows 8 where a lot of people are complaining about the Windows 8 apps having ads. Now, I forget who did some user testing, but if you go into the I guess Metro apps, like for something like eBay or some built-in. Actually, there's some that are really good. I like Netflix. Netflix on Windows 8, I like a lot.
I can't get it to work.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's fine. I think but something like an eBay where I want certain information, it looks okay, but the information I want, I get so much more from the website, from being on the website, and then there are ads.
So the overall problem I have with Metro, I've been thinking about it a lot. The problem I have with Metro is that none of the apps are good enough to warrant moving away from moving away from people to run stuff in a window.
The biggest thing, the number one thing I've heard from people that actually defend, and it's, again, I haven't spent a lot of time with it. I like Windows 8. I think it looks cool. But a lot of people that
because you haven't spent a lot of time with it.
A lot of people defend it against the criticism saying, oh, it's not so bad. Just get rid of the tiles and live in the desktop. And it's basically a slightly better version of Windows 7. Mm-hmm. So basically what they're saying is the best thing about Windows 8 is that you can get rid of its flagship feature.
Yeah. Well, no, you can't really because you have to do it. You have to launch into that.
Right.
The other thing that annoys me is all the default apps have ads, or not all of them, but weather and news and stocks.
Yes.
Which I don't care. It feels really weird to me that I'm paying money for an OS that has a whole shitload of ads.
Well, the market analysts, you see that this week, were very bearish. On Windows 8.
Well, so that's the question. Like, we don't know how many copies of Windows 8 have been sold at this point.
Well, some of the analysts were, I don't know where they're getting the numbers from, but they're saying the sales so far have not been great.
Right.
That people, like, they're looking at a lot of people complaining about finding the UI confusing and not liking it, which is really the worst.
Yeah, hiding core UI elements off screen that require gestures that you don't explain how to do is going to be real bad. Yeah.
Is this something that PC, because they expect to sell, 350 million PCs next year, over the entire Windows ecosystem. If that happens and people are on Windows 8 regardless of whether they want to or not, whether they buy a new PC, that can encourage developers to actually go develop apps?
Maybe, but if not, if people don't like using Metro. If people avoid Metro intent, and like part of it, we'll see the Surface RT returns. I'm going to be really interested to see how many of those get sent back. Since most of them are sold direct from Microsoft, we probably never hear.
You see that one guy's suing Microsoft now about the memory thing?
We talked about that some 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah. Well, we talked about the fact that the 32 gigabyte only has half of that space usable. That Microsoft is now being sued over that.
I think that's probably right.
I think the guy has a case.
Right. I think the good thing that can come out of this is truth on all sides, because I think that the Apple doesn't demonstrate properly.
Again, all companies should be required by law to state how much of the memory is actually user accessible.
Well, and the difference is on PCs, people advertise, here's the hard drive that's in this device. It is a 120 gigabyte hard drive. With the tablets, they're saying it is a 32 gigabyte device, which seems fairly different to me. I like that seems like a very clear distinction to me. Nobody knows how many copies of Windows have been sold except for probably Microsoft. We don't know how many units, how much hardware has been sold. We don't know how many boxed copies, downloads they sold. And I don't think they've released any press releases yet.
It's the first, I don't use my PC for a lot other than gaming, but it's the first Windows in a long time that I haven't bothered to go get. And it's cheap too.
When you can download it. Like, you don't even have to go to a store. Yeah. You can do it from the internet.
Yeah. And it's only like, what, $40?
It's $40 for an upgrade. If you want to get it, if you ever want to get it, you should get it before January 1, because I think that's when the promo pricing expires.
There's no benefit to me though. Like, In fact, it's breaking a bunch of games that I would want to play.
It doesn't break stuff. Everything works for me.
Oh, I've heard a bunch of people complaining about certain games in Windows 8.
People always complain about something. Anyway, the upshot is Windows 8. Nobody knows how many copies it's sold.
Yeah.
Except for Microsoft.
And I've got a desktop computer as well. So like all the cool stuff that Norm's doing with swiping and shit, it's like I wouldn't even get the benefit out of the touch.
Yeah. Yeah. For desktop, really makes no sense to me. And a lot of people, like Lloyd on desktop, uses Metro, the start screen as a start menu. So all he does is get rid of rearrange the tiles so it's just shortcuts. So what he would normally have in the start menu for shortcuts.
Because that makes perfect sense. Everybody should be doing that. What mail client do you use on Windows if you don't use Outlook or Windows Mail now? Because Thunderbird's not being updated anymore, right?
I use mail client in Windows.
You use a web. I use the web.
Chrome and multiple tabs and different web browsers.
I like having a mail client.
I do too.
Why?
It seems a little faster. Gmail's always fucking slow.
Oh, Gmail's so fast.
I think Gmail's ugly.
And I think every mail client, aside from a web browser and Gmail, the download, the refresh takes only. If I receive an email, it always gets to the web browser faster.
Well, it pushes now. You haven't used a mail client in a long time,
have you? I've mail clients on Windows 8. I use the built-in one. It's really slow.
It's really bad.
It's like at least 30 seconds to a minute. I'm saying from myself to myself before it actually gets to it.
Weird.
Search is also better in Gmail. You have advanced modifiers now.
Firefox?
It's still a thing. Story. Yeah. There's Firefox OS coming out. You can download a emulator to run Firefox. They want to make a mobile OS. Firefox. They think they can do it. It's web-based.
That's crazy.
HTML-based.
Crazy. There was an interesting story from Nielsen about, I guess it was based on a survey, about what kids want for Christmas. And they broke it down into 6 to 12-year-old kids and 13-plus kids.
Speaking of surveys,
yes.
My housemates got an awesome deal yesterday where two of these people doing, I guess, surveys also for set-top boxes stopped by and spent 2 hours interviewing my housemates, and they got $150 each.
Jesus.
To talk about their TV viewing.
Did they give
habits.
Them cash?
No, they were little Visa cash cards.
Have they tried to use them yet?
Yeah, they're $150.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, just, you can make money.
Just to talk about how you use your TV.
Were they going door to door?
You can do it. Just do surveys online and they'll give you money.
Yeah, they survey want online. I signed up for that once and then it opened the floodgates to spam. So I recommend against that.
Well, I have things to say about how I use TV and how I think set-top boxes, interfaces should be. So you can actually inform development and make money.
Yeah. I've gone to the TiVo. Ooh, everybody to wins. The TiVo broadcasting stuff before.
Oh, that reminds me. I still got to get a TiVo. I want to get one of those.
You should do that.
Maybe
really
there's a good Black Friday.
Happy
deal.
Christmas.
Yeah, I'm going to look into it.
They usually do a friends and family thing around the holiday. I'll go to the site and check and see.
All right.
Is that legit? Friends and family?
So the secret of buying TiVo, because my objection to TiVo is the monthly charge, right? That's the only thing I don't like about it.
I do not like monthly charge.
If you pay more up front.
It's a lot more though, isn't it?
But it's basically a year and a half or 2 years of service.
Yeah.
But you can't upgrade the box.
It's tied to the machine. You can put a new hard drive in the box, which is the only thing that ever dies in them. Mm-hmm. So you're good for as long as they support that piece of hardware, which typically is 5 or 6 years.
And as long as they don't introduce features that you really, really want in the next box.
And I can't imagine what at this point they're going to add that I would really, really want. It's pretty feature complete.
So how much more expensive is it?
It's like instead of $400, it's $800 probably. It's $15 a month. Is the monthly charge per box. For the first box, it's less for the second
$800, so you can go boop, 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 boop. Bloop, 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 bloop,
pretty good noise.
Bloop, bloop.
It's a pretty good noise, Norm.
It's ridiculous.
Xfinity has a new cable box out called the X1. Maybe I'll just look into that. It's slightly nicer interface.
I mean, if you want somebody to kick you in the groin after the show, we can arrange that too.
Yeah, it's not good.
So what do you think the number one thing a 6 to 12-year-old child in the U.S. is interested in getting for Christmas? Actually, the question
is a fun
buying in the next 6 months.
See, kids are a lot more sophisticated than they used to be. I was going to say some kind of toy, but it's probably like an iPad or something.
That is exactly right.
Number one,
50% of children aged 6 to 12 are interested in buying an iPad in the next 12 months.
Or interested in receiving an iPad.
They're certainly interested in buying one.
It says interest in buying. I'm just reading the chart.
Interested in their parents buying them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think the number two item is?
Oh, this is also very, very interesting.
I'm probably wrong, but I'm going to guess some kind of game console.
Wow.
Did you read the story?
Is that an Xbox?
Wii U.
Okay.
Wii U.
Because they would want the
Mario.
Newest one. Yeah.
So we don't see those ads. I bet if you watch Nickelodeon.
There's a lot
MTV,
of Nintendo Wii U ads on
right now. Oh, Wii U.
Even during South Park and stuff like that, it's Wii U.
I haven't seen any Wii U ads yet.
I don't watch ads very much, but there were a bunch of ads.
Because you got the boop, 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 boop.
Yeah, I paid a lot of money for that. Number three is the iPod Touch. Number four is the iPad Mini.
So they actually differentiated between the iPad and iPad Mini.
Oh, okay.
My hunch is that that's not probably true. My hunch is that a lot of kids just said iPad, but they meant iPad Mini.
So Apple has three of the top four spots.
Yeah. Four of the top five stops.
Oh, really?
Because the iPhone is number five.
Holy crap.
And then after that
Apple.
is a computer.
Get them when they're young.
And just to be clear, Apple doesn't really market to kids.
No.
No.
It's really crazy.
But, you know, I'm so curious. I don't know.
If you market stuff to kids won't want it. They want the stuff that the grown-ups have.
I think that this is a situation where kids want what their parents have.
Yeah.
Or, yes. I want to know what
the mind of a
child or a kid in middle school. Because elementary
Norm,
school.
Norm, close your eyes for a minute. Let's think back.
In middle school, because I have no idea what that's like right now. So middle school is a tough place. Kids are.
Yeah.
They understand that they. You know, that life is complicated. It's not magical as it was in elementary school, but they're still not at a point in their life where they feel like they have any control over any of that.
They haven't developed irony yet.
And social situations are very, very complicated in middle school. If there are any middle schoolers listening to the podcast, first of all, you shouldn't be listening to this podcast.
Yeah, we use naughty language.
Adults only. Second of all, send us a message. I want to know what the playground situation is like.
So when I was in middle school, you didn't bring anything that you liked to school. At least I didn't, because you would have been taken away and you would have been stomped.
Wow.
Yeah. Growing up in the mean streets of Bristol, Tennessee.
Wow. Playground stomped.
Playground stomped.
AstroTurf stomp.
No. We didn't have AstroTurf. We had grass. We're in the country.
Yeah.
It's not here. It's
why
not
like, you're playing football.
It was before they invented that bullshit plastic stuff that kids bounce off of when they fall off the
swings. So what then are the items that older kids want?
Well, it's interesting you asked that, Gary. Kids age 13 and up, what do you think the number one is?
I mean, I guess I'm going to say it's still an iPad.
It's still an iPad. Much smaller percentage,
only 21%.
Though.
I think they realize the price of these things. And probably kids 13 and up have to actually buy their own things.
And they're probably thinking about utility, too. Because the number two is a computer,
they can do everything. They can have all the chats on the computer,
right.
The sexting on the computer.
Right.
Yeah.
And if they get the right kind of computer, they can even do the FaceTimes.
iPads, it's still kind of limited.
Number three is a tablet computer other than the iPad.
That, to me, is surprising.
Which I assume means Kindle Fire and Nexus 7 as well.
E-readers are down later.
Now, kids aren't...
Kindle Fire is separated out, but Nexus 7 isn't.
But kids aren't saying, like, oh, I just want a tablet other than an iPad. Are they just taking every other answer?
Because they split out the Kindle Fire.
I do not think that is correct. I bet the Kindle Fire is a subset of tablets other than the iPad.
Yeah, any kind of Android tablet or whatever is going to be in there.
Think about that poor bastard that wants an Android tablet. iPhone, Wii U, iPhone, smart TV, e-reader, smartphone other than the iPhone, iPad Mini, Android smartphone, Kindle Fire, Kinect for a 360, iPod Touch, Samsung Galaxy, Note or Tab. That's 9% people want that. I can see how if you're a kid, you might want that. It might be good for taking notes in school.
Wow.
Maybe.
Microsoft Surface, 3%.
Yeah, so the losers are more interesting, I think, than the winners here. Because the losers, the bottom five for 6 to 12-year-olds are the Samsung Galaxy Note or Tab, still 10%. I think 6-year-olds want everything is the takeaway.
I really want to meet the kids age 6 to 12, and I'm not going to stop there because that's really weird, the 6% of them who want a Microsoft Surface. 6% of kids aged 6 to 12 told Nielsen they wanted specifically.
I wonder how they do this survey. Do you think they hold up a picture and if the kid is like, I want that, then they say yes?
It's like a menu at a shitty restaurant. You just point to the thing you want.
I bet they said, you know, what are the things you want? And they had to write an order of things they want.
Maybe they're sitting in front of a screen.
Like, excuse me, did you know that I don't want to be in the walled garden.
Pardon me, sir.
Age 6 to 12. Right, I believe.
No, he is in the walled garden.
Some 6-year-old kid going. It's all about ecosystem.
Microsoft. I believe Microsoft Surface's ability to unite desktop and
Pro RT.
I'm looking forward to getting out of this walled playground.
Oh, you gotta watch out for the walled playground.
Have
you guys been following Star Citizen? It's Chris Roberts, the Wing Commander guy's game.
Yeah, and he's made a lot of money.
Yeah, so the Kickstarter finished yesterday, Tuesday. And they have the new record. Well, it's not really on Kickstarter exclusively. They built their own thing and then also posted it on Kickstarter. But they raised $6.3 million to make what seems like Super Duper Freelancer.
Yeah.
Which I'm super duper excited about.
I hope it's great.
Did you pitch in?
No. I've never pitched in on a Kickstarter.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I gave him the money to get the game. I'm interested.
Never okay. pitched it on a Kickstarter?
I'm thinking about maybe doing it for what actually is kind of the rival. You know, David Braben is doing the new Elite.
Ooh,
as a Kickstarter.
I would kickstart that too.
And I have more of I love Chris Roberts and I love his games, but I have more of an emotional attachment to the Elite world, which is also now being kickstarted.
Well, the thing I liked about the Elite was the same thing I loved about Freelancer. Which was that there was economy and you could kind of just go around and do stuff.
Elite was really the beginning of all of those games.
Yeah, see, I never played Elite until it was too old to like the graphics were bad enough that I had trouble going back to it.
When it came out 1984. Four, I want to say.
Yeah, that was way well before my time.
Fucking good.
Well before my time with PC games. $6.3 million, new record, and they ended up hitting all of their stretch goals. They're building this massive galaxy. I'm super excited about it. It's 2014 though, so it's a long wait.
It's still not a huge amount of money when you consider an ambitious game like that. Well, game budgets are big.
$30 or $40 million. I mean, it's not untold. For a game like, especially like Assassin's Creed or something that's open world,
sure.
Like that is a $40 million
game.
They're
like Hollywood movie budgets. Yeah.
I'm really interested. I think the idea on this though is that you raise a bunch of money from the community and essentially pre-orders, and then that allows you to go out and get a loan from a bank rather than having to go get venture funding or get
maybe
a publisher.
So. They'll probably supplement it from other sources. So that's definitely a good start.
That lets you make good decisions. So you don't end up having beholden to a publisher or to investors or something like that.
Yeah. It sounds great, and I really hope it's great, and it's exactly the kind of game that I would want to play. So, good luck to Chris Roberts.
OS 10.9 rumors. This is the as-yet unnamed successor to Mountain Lion. Mm. Word on the street is it's going to include Siri and Apple Maps.
Wouldn't surprise me. Not really excited about either of those.
If Apple Maps included... Why isn't OS 10, whatever Mac OS next version needs touch? It has to be in the roadmap.
It has touch,
somewhere.
Dude. I don't. 10.8 had touch too. 10.7 had touch. It's right here on the trackpad.
Not good enough.
Okay,
but you're talking about new hardware with touch screens. Yeah. Well, you're not going to see that for another year.
Maybe it's
we won't see
not like
OS
thoroughly integrated.
Either,
it doesn't need to be everywhere. I don't want it to be everywhere.
Okay,
but where it makes sense.
Bigger trackpads. That's my the whole wrist rest will be trackpad next year.
Cool.
Let's see. Wired had an interesting story about. I love these stories because they always seem really. I don't know. It seems convenient to me. The stories about connections between skill at video games and skill with surgical tools because it's the same kind of fine motor control and hand eye coordination
before.
And all
that
stuff.
Been around forever.
This is a new one. So there was a study, and I read it last night, but I'm going to probably fuck up the details, so I apologize in advance. But basically, they were looking at – they put kids in front of a game that simulated – and high school and college-age kids in front of a game that simulated robotic-assisted laparoscopic surgery controls, which basically when you see – there's things that you put your fingers in. There's a bunch of different gloves. And
that's
right,
awesome.
And right. It looks like it's crazy. The thing that they found, the interesting thing to me was that college kids who on average played an hour or two more of games a day than the high school kids were significantly better at the laparoscopic game.
That was their method for testing?
What
difference
do you mean?
Between college kids and high school kids? Sounds like that's a terrible
It was a much larger – this was the one interesting takeaway I got from this.
It wasn't like they separated college kids in one room, high school kids
in one
room.
No. Okay. They did everybody individually, and then they gave them a survey about their habits about gaming and TV watching and stuff like that. So the upshot is playing certain types of games is going to improve your fine motor control and hand-eye coordination in theory.
Did they test between difference using keyboard and mouse and a game controller?
I assume that they did not. I assume that they distinguished with that on the survey, but I don't know. I don't know what the breakdown on that was. That wasn't in the story. And the survey was behind a paywall. The study was behind a paywall, so I didn't pay the $30. So the idea, the takeaway was surgeons should play more video games.
Right?
Surgeons should play more video games.
Yeah.
Probably not Wii games. Unless you want to get carved up like a Thanksgiving turkey on the operating table.
What was that? There was a DS/Wii game that was...
Oh, Trauma Center is very popular.
Trauma Center. Yeah. And, I learned how to do surgery from that.
Yeah. I mean, some of those games like Boom Blocks require very, precise surgeries. Like, yes, I'll be taking your kidneys out tomorrow. Don't worry. I've played Boom Blocks. I'm a level 90. Yeah, that's
Dark
great.
Souls. It's all about the Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Slow, deliberate actions.
Oh.
Do you want to talk about the Japanese robo book scanner?
It's a really cool video everyone should watch. It's awesome how these robots can scan books. And this robot flips the pages at 250 pages per minute.
Like data.
Yes, yeah,
exactly. Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. And then a camera takes a picture and it can know the optimal time when the page is about to turn to take the picture. And then the
it does that because it measures the measures 3D space.
Digitizing books.
Yeah, there's 3D space. And then it knows how curved the page is, has a 3D rendering of that, and then flattens out the page.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so you get a whole book. The book's just really being flipped by a robot hand.
Right.
And then cameras just taking pictures and you get high definition scans.
It's great.
Do you guys know about the CAPTCHA stuff that Google does? Like why they do that? Have we talked about this before?
Nope.
So you know what a CAPTCHA is, right?
Yeah.
It's that little thing you have to type in that has two kind of fuzzy words that are all distorted.
Yes.
So Google made that reCAPTCHA service or one of the CAPTCHA services. I can't remember which one it is. I think it's the reCAPTCHA. And what they do is they use scans from books that they scanned with Google Books mm-hmm. as the source when they have an inconclusive scan. So they think they know what the word is, but they're not sure. And then they feed it to people who fill out billions of those CAPTCHAs a day, and it allows them to clarify whether the book
that's
is good or not.
Brilliant.
Oh, so it's not just a test that you're not a robot.
Right. You're giving them data at the same time.
Wow. I hate CAPTCHAs even more now.
Mind-blowing.
So they do that with a lot of stuff. Like that game that we talked about last week, the place game, I can't remember what it's called, the immersion or whatever. The idea behind that is to collect path-based maps data for stuff that they can't get otherwise. So like footpaths, they have bad data on right now. But if you're playing that game, you're walking along footpaths, they collect your data the entire step of the way. You think you're playing a fun game. They're collecting data on where footpaths are.
That's very cool.
Places that are covered by trees or satellites don't cover whatever.
I like that.
It's real gamification.
It is real gamification.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
Achievement points BS.
AT&T activated FaceTime for cellular. Why do they do this? Was there a court case or something?
There was pressure on them. Yes, litigation and FCC pressure. But originally, as we all know, that's on the table, people who had Verizon, unlimited FaceTime over cellular.
Yeah.
On AT&T.
No, it's not unlimited. It's in your data plan.
Because there is no unlimited plan. Correct.
Yeah, but it's not capped within your data plan.
You can't not do it because your carrier doesn't allow. Like I could FaceTime Gary right now.
If you FaceTime,
totally could on our LTE network.
Yeah,
right. And it counts toward your data.
Widest LTE network.
That's right.
It counts toward your data, whatever data you paid for month to month. And AT&T did not allow that for AT&T users because they wanted to say FaceTime over cellular would only be allowed if you join our new mobile share plans.
Right, the bullshit plans.
The bullshit plans. And they stepped back on that and a few weeks ago and said, okay, fine. So many people complain. We're going to allow it to people who have regular cellular plans, not the mobile share ones, but regular LTE plans, single user plans.
Not the grandfathered and unlimited.
Not the grandfathered unlimited ones. Yesterday, grandfathered unlimited, such as myself, LTE over cellular or right. FaceTime over LTE.
But you
LTE.
Realize, again, as soon as you go over 3 gigs, that FaceTime is going to turn into a slideshow.
But I still be able to use data.
Yes, you will. You'll be able to get to that thrall cap so much more quickly now.
Yeah. Can you tether yet? Are they going to allow that, or are they going to still charge extra for that?
I think tethering is extra.
I got to tell you, so I just updated to this unlimited,
mobile share.
Well, Leah got an iPhone as well, and we both went onto the sharing plan, so we have unlimited minutes and all that stuff, and we have 8 gigs between us, and we also got the personal hotspots. So it was great. I had a friend, when we went to see Louis C.K. the other night, a friend was sitting next to me on his, he was saying, what's this game you're playing? So I'm playing Letterpress. He goes, oh, that looks like a lot of fun. I says, yeah, you should download it, and I'll play with you. And so he started to try and get onto the App Store on his shitty AT&T network with one bar. And I eventually got tired of watching him get frustrated. I said, here, just hotspot it off my Verizon phone. And suddenly, like, he was able to get the download and everything.
Yeah, so you're an internet superstar.
I am. I love being an internet superstar.
Yeah.
That little hotspot feature is great. It works really well.
It's not something you're ever going to leave on all the time. But I actually carry a spare battery, a Mophie, with me. And then I can plug it in and let it go all day.
I have a question about that, though.
Yeah.
On Verizon, because you can't use data and voice at the same time, can I still get an incoming call if I'm hotspotting?
You can get an incoming call.
But I would have to break the hotspot.
But then it breaks the hotspot.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I'm not like, that I could, they can at least get the call.
Yeah, you know, the call will register. It's not like the
calls
people
are a higher
busy.
Priority than downloading apps.
Right.
Yeah.
But in accepting the call, the hotspot will shut down. Okay.
So, Norm, you put something here at the end of the list that is very controversial. Engadget. We don't usually talk about this. Is kind of inside baseball, I guess. But Engadget posted a story last week.
Oh, they had a great redesign also.
Yeah, the redesign is lovely.
I need to go look at that because Engadget is the site that I most frequently go to for tech news.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Whatever. I'm fucking with you. I know the limits of Tested's tech coverage. We just do the important
You guys
stuff.
Are more like the feature section. If I just want news, then I'm going to go to a straight up news blog.
So they posted a story earlier this week that I think.
It's editorial.
Editorial. And it was. Oh, did something just crash?
No, nothing crashed. It said low battery warning.
Okay.
I haven't charged.
Wow, already?
Well, I haven't charged in a week.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. So what's the story on this?
They wrote an editorial about how pricing on tablets like the Nexus 7, the Kindle Fire, the aggressive pricing will hurt the tablet market overall.
So a race to the bottom story, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And the anti-Apple crowd came in and said this article was very defensive against Apple and justifying Apple's high prices on the iPad mini and other products. And there were 4,000 comments.
Is that a lot?
That's a lot. Yes. That's a lot on anything.
That's a lot on anything. 4,000. When The Verge does a quote-unquote controversial review like of the Surface or like Windows 8 because lots of Windows fans out there, right? You get maybe 1,000 comments. 4,000 comments.
Well, anytime you set Apple people up against non-Apple people, it's always a fight.
I read the story just because somebody sent me the link before the comments happened, and I was like, yeah, this is exactly right. And people are going to start yelling about us being the Apple Defense Force. But setting price expectations for this, unless the manufacturers can actually hit those price points 9 months or a year from now.
What's their basic argument? Why are cheap tablets bad for the market?
They're basically just saying they're setting up a race to the bottom where the margins are going to get thinner and thinner and the vendors eventually won't be able to make a profit and make products at the price that people expect. And it'll be basically like the laptop PC market.
It's one thing to have cheap tablets, but if the price of that is shitty tablets and people kind of go, oh, I don't really like this experience, then yeah, that's bad. You want a premium experience, like the iPad is a premium version of a tablet experience, a bit more expensive, but you're guaranteed to have a good experience.
The more interesting thing about the story isn't the actual editorial. It's the fact that they made an apology. The Engadget made an apology as a footnote to this editorial. And it said basically, look, hey, we're sorry. We didn't mean this to be an iPad apology piece, which I found unprecedented.
I'm surprised. Why would they do that?
I don't have any idea.
Apparently, it was not with the approval of their EIC.
The apology?
Yeah. Oh. Tim Stevens removed the apology.
Oh, good for Tim Stevens.
Yeah.
Right on.
That is being addressed or has already been addressed.
Yeah, I mean, I could see posting a clarification in the comments that said, hey, this isn't intended to be an Apple apologist piece. You're reading into it what you want to see, which happens a lot.
So it sounds like the majority of these 4,000 comments were people calling them Apple apologists.
I wonder what the source of the comments was. If there was a message board thread someplace that got out of control and people started comment bombing or whatever. I don't know what it was.
Front page of AOL, maybe.
Could be front page of AOL. Yeah, that's a lot of. But those people, I wonder if the people on the front page of AOL give a shit about iPad and Nexus 7. Anyway, I thought that was really weird. Do you want to take a minute and talk about what we're thankful for, gentlemen? Is it too saccharine and pedestrian for this?
I wanted to ask Norm what his thanks. What's your Thanksgiving like?
I'm gonna play a song.
Like, oh, you know, we go.
I was given a break.
But Norm was,
and that's how I celebrate Thanksgiving.
That's amazing. That's the best story I've ever heard.
It just sounded like you had no interest in Norm's story, so you just cut him off.
No.
Yep. And that's how I celebrate.
What do you do for Thanksgiving, Norm?
You know, we do the laundry and build the railroads and all that stuff.
Oh, come on.
See, I did not go there. You went there.
I thought that,
I mean, isn't Asian Thanksgiving different in any way?
No, family dinner.
Turkey and stuffing and gravy and mashed potatoes.
Duck and,
okay. What like
presence of duck is
the duck roasted? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so you have a duck instead of a turkey?
No, there's a turkey and duck.
Oh, you do multiple meats? Yeah. I only do one meat.
I think less and less bound to the rules of traditional Thanksgiving.
Because the pilgrims.
I do like a nice ham on Thanksgiving as well. I think like that's always.
We used to do that Honey Baked Ham Company ham.
Yeah.
Well, I do ham at Christmas. I want to do a goose at Christmas this year.
Yeah, I always wanted to do a goose.
You talked about doing one last year, and then I guess we didn't do it.
Didn't do it.
Yeah.
It's easier to talk about things, harder to actually do them.
I don't know. I'd be afraid. I don't know how to cook a goose.
Well, Leah's brother is a chef, so we would have got some good tips, but...
Yeah.
And we're away for Christmas this year, so someone else will cook.
Oh, that's nice.
But I'm thankful for, so many things.
Well, you have a beautiful baby girl.
Thankful for my beautiful baby girl and, you know, my family and all the blessings of life in general. Just I'm very fortunate.
Time to reflect on
the
year.
And it is good. It is good to remember that sometimes because we moan about, oh, it's taking 5 minutes to upload this update. Fuck off. You don't have any real problems.
I don't know, man. That Wii U launch update was real slow. Real slow. We'll talk about that in a minute, though.
Somebody said, I can't remember what it was. It was somebody made a great tweet that got retweeted a lot. It was like between, I can't remember what the first thing was. It was like between such and such a thing and the really long firmware week for Wii U. This has been a really tough week for people with no problems. Which is
the Twinkie. It must have been the Hostess thing.
That SNL sketch, but the iPhone sketch was great.
The racist one?
Yeah.
Well, the super duper racist one?
But it made a very good point that we are so...
Fred Armisen should not play Asian people.
We live
the point
in
that
such
I thought
a privileged
Fred
world.
Fred Armisen should play anything with Fred Armisen.
Right.
We live in such Barack a privileged world that we've been forced to amplify trivial problems to the scale of real problems. Whereas there are actual people out there.
So those people
actually have real problems.
You know, I'm going to go ahead and tell you, the place where I dropped my phone, it's kind of worn down so you don't even notice it anymore.
Yeah, it's good.
Like I only see it on one side now.
We're doing the thing this year where instead of giving gifts to each other, we're going to do the adopt a family thing and give a random family that doesn't have things gifts.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Well, you're a hard person to shop for gifts for.
Yeah, because I just buy
you tend to go out and buy whatever you want.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, all of us have that problem, I think.
Yeah.
So you're coming over to my house for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and we'll eat turkey and maybe play some Mario Brothers.
Yeah. I started the brine. I started brining last night.
I'm excited. I want to see what kind of sides. I mean, the turkey is great, but I'm always more interested in the sides. What sides are you doing?
So we do the traditional American Pepperidge Farms blue stuffing. The chunk. Not the chunks, the ground up pieces.
Yeah, that's good.
With celery, onion. Cook it all in chicken broth. So it's a little heartier.
Oh, I wish Leah was making her sausage stuffing. That's the best.
If she wants to bring stuffing, we will.
Maybe
we
I'll
will
just
have
bring
room
a sausage
in the oven. You could bring a sausage.
Stuffing, just take a bite.
They sell
out
stuffing
of it
outside Thanksgiving. We've
talked about. Oh yeah,
you can buy stuffing any time of the year.
I would eat stuffing all year round. Just a big bowl of stuffing and gravy.
I don't think that's on your.
Thing.
That's like the carbiest.
Yeah,
thing
it's
you
not
can
exactly
eat.
We should have talked about Hostess as well. That would have been a good
we
story.
We can do it. I figured I was saving that for outtakes.
Maybe for fake outtakes. Yeah. So what are you doing? Are you doing green beans?
Gina made a green bean casserole last night and made cream of mushroom soup from scratch.
Ooh.
And we had leftover soup. So I came home from childbirth class last night. And by the way, that was the bad child. We'll talk about that in a little bit too. And had homemade cream of mushroom soup that was the best thing I've ever had. Wonderful. It was unbelievable.
Love it. This sounds great. What kind of potatoes?
Mashed. Yukon Golds.
Okay, good. This all sounds great.
No.
And how do
Straight.
You – what?
Why not
salt,
garlic?
Salt, butter, and cream.
And how do you do your gravy?
Two whole cloves, heads of garlic.
No garlic mashed potatoes
do you
for
use
Thanksgiving.
The, do you use the turkey drippings for the gravy?
Fuck yeah. Okay. And we do butt stuffing too. I don't believe in that cowardly don't stuff your bird bullshit.
I've never done the stuffing your bird because it is – you can die.
Well, the trick is – the secret of stuffing the bird is that you measure the temperature of the stuffing so you take the bird out when it's done cooking, and then you scoop the stuffing out immediately. And if it needs more temperature, if it hasn't hit 160 yet, then you put it in a casserole dish and put it in the oven and cook it a little bit more.
How could you one of the great episodes of The West Wing is that Thanksgiving episode where the president calls the Butterball hotline. One of the best things
oh,
ever.
What does he do?
Have you seen?
No, I didn't watch The West Wing. It was a mistake.
There's a Thanksgiving episode where he's cooking the turkey for the family. And he's complaining. He can't get an answer on like how long to cook it for when you stuff the bird, and says something to one of his advisors like, "There should be a national number that people that need turkey tips on Thanksgiving can call and get answers when the hotline is staffed by experts." And it's like, there is such a thing. It's called the Butterball Hotline, and it's staffed by experts, and you can call and it's free, and people will give you answers. And he calls it up, and obviously can't tell them who he is, but gets into a fight.
Sheen.
Yeah. He got in a fight with the Butterball hotline?
Well, and the Butterball person is like, you sound really familiar. He's like, gets into an argument with one of the Butterball experts about how to properly cook stuff and cook a turkey.
That's so Sorkin.
It's a great episode. But yeah, I don't think I've ever, I've never done the stuffing, but I imagine, I mean, why is it better? Why is it better to cook the stuffing inside the bird?
Well, because what happens is the fat and the juices from the bird permeate the stuffing.
Oh man, I really should have eaten breakfast before I came out.
Oh yeah, you made a mistake. You'll see tomorrow.
Okay, I'm excited about it. It's good. I'm excited.
What's unhealthy about uncooked stuffing?
So it's the same thing as eating uncooked turkey.
Because
the juices. Mm. So you have to make sure that the stuffing reaches the temperature 160, 165 to be safe.
And also, if you're doing really, really high end stuffing that's got like oysters and stuff in it,
that's a whole other set of health problems.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't, like, I don't recommend stuffing. I only stuff no meat stuffing.
But you cook your whole turkey.
I just like ghetto Thanksgiving. I don't like it. Like, I'm one of those, again, I don't even like cranberry sauce, but I'm one of those people that believes that cranberry sauce should come in a fucking can and wobble.
So Gina started the homemade cranberry sauce when I was leaving the house.
I don't eat the cranberry sauce, so I'm all good.
You know, the cranberry sauce.
Do you put French fried onions on top of the green bean casserole?
I think she's making a topping for the green bean casserole.
Okay.
We did the Paula Deen green bean casserole a couple years running because I figured if you're going to eat fucking green bean casserole, you might as well eat the fattiest one possible.
Yeah.
But it turns out that, like, it when it cools, a thin layer of grease congeals on the top, which was super gross. So we're not doing Paula Deen this year.
Okay.
The Paula Deen had the French onions, the French's onion, string onions on top.
Yeah, I like those.
I do too. I used to eat those out of the can.
Oh, yeah, me too. Love those French fried onions.
Yeah, the raw oysters, if you do oyster or liver or something like that, Andy McCurdy's, I think, wife makes, maybe Andy makes, I can't remember, makes a liver stuffing that's like a cornbread liver stuffing that is awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm not even a huge liver fan as a general rule. So
yeah.
So yeah, butt stuffing, regular stuffing, mashed potatoes, green bean casserole, cranberry sauce.
Sounds
good. I'm really just in it for the sandwiches, though.
Best part is leftovers.
Turkey sandwiches are good.
Leftovers.
Now, what kind of bread do you use for those leftovers?
White-ass white bread.
Yeah, just ghetto bread.
The whitest bread you can find.
Wonder bread.
And then I put mayonnaise, pepper, a little bit of kosher salt.
Why white bread? Why not a nice soft roll or wheat roll?
So the white bread. You want the bread to get out of the way of the sandwich. Bread is the
it's just a delivery system.
Yeah, the bread is basically a container you can eat.
You can see Tupperware.
Cranberry
Tupperware
sauce.
Tupperware and a fork.
Cranberry sauce, some iceberg lettuce. It's got to be the iceberg lettuce.
Lettuce at all.
Yeah, you got to have lettuce. Oh, got to have a little
turkey,
crunch.
Turkey stuffing and gravy.
You bite that sandwich. You want that sandwich to bite back.
I might just make stuffing sandwiches.
Stuffing sandwiches are good. Do you like the open face? Where you put a slice of white bread on the bottom, some turkey, some stuffing, and then a gravy. Just pour it on top and eat with a knife and fork.
I like a sandwich.
Yeah.
Two layers.
I don't know about that.
You need
fully enclosed.
I like gravy on a sandwich. A little gravy makes a sandwich go a long way.
Does anyone sell buns and sandwiches where the buns are connected, the bottoms?
Yeah, you can. Well, or you can get a bun that's just you have to cut and then you leave the fold.
It's making me hungry.
Stilled bun, like a hamburger bun.
You can get soft rolls. Like soft rolls by default come that way.
I'm not saying soft rolls. I'm saying buns and
yeast rolls. Bread. You're in charge of yeast rolls, by the way, Gary. Yeast rolls.
I don't know what that is.
Rolls.
Dinner rolls?
Dinner rolls?
Yeah.
You mean like crescent rolls?
I mean, we can make crescent rolls if you want.
I like crescent rolls. That's what I like.
Well, achi-da.
I can just bring like a tube of the Pillsbury ones.
You could do that.
They're really good. The jumbo ones, the grands.
The trays that they make at Andronico's are really good too, of the rolls.
Okay. We'll figure something out.
I think Gina's talking to Leah. It'll work itself out.
Okay, yeah, they can figure that out. Leah's been making her maple ice cream.
I know.
And
I saw that.
She's making her chocolate cake.
Like, those are my two favorite tweets of the week. The chocolate stout cake and the maple ice cream.
That chocolate stout cake is something else. Really good.
When did she make that for?
By the way, your chili recipe was fantastic.
Oh, did you make it?
Yeah, we made that and it was great.
I think that's from the Test Kitchen, New Science of Good Cooking.
Yeah, it was a great, great chili recipe.
Yeah, it's much better than the other chili recipes that they made in the past. And I think they call it Wuss chili or something like that because it has beans.
Do you want to talk about what we've been testing?
Yeah, we can do that if you want. I figure, hold on. Norm, what are you thankful for? We got sidetracked.
I got nothing not to be thankful for.
We're all very lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thankful. I got a kid
Norm's
coming.
Got his youth.
Everything seems healthy.
And his social life.
Those
got it all going on.
Childbirth classes.
We have our families.
Yeah.
We're at different stages of stuff going
Norm's
on.
Norm's 10 years behind.
Yeah.
Because he's 10 years younger.
But he's not, yes. But he's just going through.
I got my 10-year high school reunion coming up.
He has all this.
Are you going to go?
Yeah, I'm gonna go.
I didn't go to mine.
So that's a mistake.
Well, I would have had to fly back. And also, we didn't have one. So it would have been really sad if it was just me there by myself. I'm this has been a good year.
I can't imagine anything more depressing than a high school reunion. I'm glad in Britain they don't have them.
Oh, really?
Because I wouldn't go. I don't want to see those people ever again.
Well, so my tenure was in 2003, which was kind of before Facebook, so nobody was in touch with anybody. My guess is we'll probably have a 20, which is next year. Jesus, how did that happen? Yeah, if I had gone to my 10-year high school reunion, there would have been a bunch of people with like eight-year-old kids running around.
Yeah. Oh,
God.
And me. Cargo pants.
2003. And then at the 20-year-old reunion, they'd be 18 years old.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
There are people on my Facebook with kids that are finishing high school this year.
Huh.
Or maybe next year.
FTS.
Yeah. What's FTS?
Fuck that shit.
Oh, very good. Gary, what have you been testing?
I've been testing the Wii U.
Hey, me too.
Because we both got them.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, after all the fuss, wasn't terribly difficult to get one.
So I wasn't going to wait in line for a Wii U.
No.
I wasn't mentally prepared for that.
I wasn't. And then what happened was, on the morning of, Jeff Gerstmann and Ryan Davis and some other guys are tweeting their efforts. And Jeff's saying, I showed up and there's like no one in line. There's like four people in line or whatever. And I said, well, you know what? Maybe.
What if you hold a line and there's no one there?
Yeah. So
it's like
I went.
Zoom.
There's two targets nearby and they're very close to one another. And so I went out to the first target and they said, well, we've got the white one.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't really want the white one.
Super racist.
I got it anyway because I feel like I can return it.
Or you can unload it on somebody else.
Yeah, someone else will want one just in case.
I thought about hitting you up for yours, for your white one.
You go. Darren Gladstone eventually took it off.
Good for Darren. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
He can use the Wii.
Then I want to, and the guy said, I said, can you call across to the target across the street? It's weird that there are two big targets in such close proximity.
Yeah, they're like half a mile away.
They're all there. Not even that.
Well, one's a Great Land.
No, they, I mean.
Both have grocery
stores
now.
They're both very large targets. All targets have grocery stores now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Apart from, I think even the city ones have small grocery sections.
Great.
So the guy said, I only got the white. We sold out of black. I said, can you call over and see if the one across the street? He said, they don't. Just take this one. I'm like, okay, fine. I went over there just in case. And the guy said, oh, yeah, we've got black.
Yeah. So then I rolled in 2 hours later because I talked to you at probably like 9:30 or 10, maybe 10:30.
Yeah.
You said, yeah, they had a couple of blacks left. You should go up and you should call them and see.
Yeah, they had several.
And so I was like, oh, I could call, but in the distance I live from that target and the amount of time it'll take me to get through the voice jail, I might as well just put on pants and jump in the car and drive over
so
there.
So what happened when you went over there?
So I rolled in. I couldn't find the electronic center because I've never been in that target before because parking is always bad there.
Yeah.
And I finally found the electronic center, and like there was a dude behind me, and I got there first, and I got the last black Wii U.
Oh, good for you. Did he also want a black Wii U?
No, he did. He wanted a copy of Madden for the 360.
Oh.
So, yeah, we were cool.
So you actually got the last one.
I got the last one.
And you
one.
Got it because I gave you the hot tip on
I appreciate
that location.
It. And tested readers have you to thank for our coverage of the Wii U, which will be coming next week sometime.
Yeah. So I got it home. And
how much is the black one?
$350.
Mm.
I don't think there's ever been
$500.
I don't think there's ever been such a case of like the black one is clearly the one to get
a difference.
So the cradle, you get a cradle for the charger for the pad, which is
actually
a huge
very
difference
nice to have. Yes,
although the battery, well, we'll talk about that in a sec. But and you get to copy of Nintendo Land, which is an extra $60,
$60 on its right. own.
Yeah,
plus you get
an HDMI cable. $3.
An HDMI cable. You get a few discounts in the eShop, but mostly what you get is 32 gigs of storage versus 8 gigs. That's a big
and difference. The discount in the eShop is for the life of the machine, right?
I'm not sure.
And the difference of price is $350 and
$500. The biggest
no $350
$300 for the white, $350 for the black.
Only $50 difference.
Yes. Basically you get
four
Nintendo
times
Land
the storage and Nintendo Land and a charger cradle thing and a bunch of other shit.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
yeah.
It's not even close.
Yeah. So I took it back. Brought it home. Same experience, I assume.
Yeah.
I had a little bit of trouble connecting it to my Wi-Fi because
I plugged mine into Ethernet. I don't fuck around with
How did you plug it into Ethernet?
Ethernet. The original Wii has a USB Ethernet adapter.
Wow,
which also
really?
Works with the Wii U. Yeah, so mine is wired.
Pro tip.
Oh, man, I wish I had that because the Wi-Fi setup was a pain in the ass.
The sensor bar, a bunch of accessories work with the Wii U.
Well, so yeah, the sensor bar is the same thing. It's just two infrared lights.
I got it. I think it's like Nyko or maybe it's Nintendo themselves that made it. It was like $20. It plugs into a USB port in the back of the Wii U or the Wii, and you plug an Ethernet cable. I have a spare Ethernet connection downstairs, so I just use it for that.
Man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure enough. A Nyko one for $16.
Worth getting. If you've got a spare Ethernet port, it's worth getting.
Yeah. So plugged it in. The first thing it says is, hey, let's set up your Nintendo account.
Yeah.
do you have a Nintendo Fun Club or whatever their frequent partner thing is.
Yeah.
You set up the account. There's some questions about whether the account's tied to that machine forever now, because it seems like you can't log in.
Right now it is, but I imagine they'll change that because a lot of people are complaining about it.
I wonder how many people are going to have multiple Wii U's.
It's still annoying.
I got to think that's a low percentage.
Do this. A lot of kids, 6 to 12, want Wii U's.
That's true.
The first thing I actually did was begin the process of the Wii transfer, because I've got a bunch of stuff on the Wii that I wanted to bring over, especially my Miis, which Leah and I were very successful in making Miis that look very much like us.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to have to replicate. I tried doing it again, and I couldn't get one that looked as good. So I thought, well, I'm just going to copy the
Did the transfer work?
Over.
I know some people had problems
it
with
it. It worked, and it's adorable. Have you seen the transfer process?
No.
It's great.
It's Pikmin, right?
It's a bunch of Pikmin go into your Wii, inside the virtual guts of your Wii, and like pack up. They're like a moving crew that pack up all your data, and they take it into a rocket ship that flies through the space to your Wii U. And then they unload all your data into
so
the Wii U.
I'm afraid to do that because this is the work Wii U, and I don't want to get my Wii stuff on my virtual console stuff on a Wii U that's not mine.
That's certainly something to consider.
Yeah. So, because this will eventually end up living in our office, I assume.
But you now have your Nintendo ID on it, which is also
which may be a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, why not do it? And then buy another one that you can just donate to work or something.
Or I just don't expense the one that I have. But anyway, we'll figure it out.
There are many options.
Yeah. Anyway, all told, it ended up being about $500 for – it doesn't come with a Wiimote. Neither of them come with a Wiimote, which I find really weird since you need Wiimotes to play games.
You need Wiimotes to play pretty much – you don't need them.
Expect people to already have Wiis or
– Well, but the thing is you need the Wiimotion plus Wiimotes or the Wiimote with the condom and the foot thing.
Yeah. I'm surprised that they didn't ship a Wiimote with it.
I was a little surprised. I mean, I'm sure that they'll release
– Most games are playable on the gamepad.
Right, but so first party games, I assume that at some point they'll do the same thing they did with the previous, with like Skyward Sword and Wii Resort Plus, and where they'll bundle additional controllers at reduced cost with the game.
You know, when friends come over, it's bring your own Wiimote.
Well, that's what people did in the beginning when you couldn't get Wiimotes.
And of course, given it being the age of consoles that we now live in, the first thing you do is download a massive fucking patch.
5 gigs.
Yeah.
Took an hour.
Took me an hour.
Yeah, same thing.
And that was over a wired connection.
It took an hour. It was an hour. The problem was Nintendo, not us.
You don't have to do it.
But nothing works. If you don't do it, you have nothing internet connected. There's no Miiverse. There's no online functionality whatsoever.
Right. And also, the other good thing is that you can actually do it in the background. So you don't have to sit there and wait.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You can do other things while it's down.
Oh, I let it run. I just did it in the foreground.
Yeah, I just waited. And it was a lot. I don't know what it is about Nintendo. And this was a big patch. Even simple things. The Wii, which was the first really connected Nintendo console on this one, the online functionality is so slow. Downloads take forever.
It's not just online. It's everything about the – so
it's incredibly slow.
Yeah, the UI in general is very, very – the OS is very slow.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, like to go to the settings and to the menu and back again, you're looking at like 15 seconds between screens.
At one point, I don't know
what is going on.
At one point, I was like, I busted out the Surface to see which one was faster, and the Surface was faster than this. Wow. So
when you're slower than the Surface, that's fucking bad.
And also,
I don't know if yours is locked up.
I haven't had any crashes.
Mine is locked up a few times, and apparently a lot of people had this problem where you got to just pull the power to get it back up.
Oh, I haven't had that at all.
Yeah.
Did you want to try any next gen games on it? Like I guess Arkham City or.
I didn't
know. Well, and again, this is, I think, indicative of the not being a strong. I mean, launch lineups are never strong and they don't really matter in the end anyway because the games will come. They always do on every system. The Xbox 360 didn't have a great launch lineup. Now it's got amazing games.
Yeah, I mean, at Xbox 360 launch, the best game was Geometry Wars. Far and away.
At launch?
Yeah. Yeah, at launch.
Wow. Yeah. Xbox 360 had a terrible.
It was like Cameo, terrible. Perfect Dark. Was there Project Gotham? Maybe
the days
Call of Duty 2,
the days of systems launching with at least one really killer game. That's over. We don't have that anymore.
I disagree. I think you're wrong about the launch lineup on this console.
Well, look. Here's what happened to me. The guy when I bought the Wii had a massive crate of games.
Yeah,
and he said because all the games are out, and he said, "Well, look, we have buy two get one 50% off. So if you're going to get games, get them now." And I was like, "Well, let's see what you have." I knew I was going to get Super Mario Brothers because that's obviously the no brainer. You're going to have that. And
the prices are $60 now for these games, right?
Most of them.
Yeah. But then I couldn't find two others that I really wanted. I was thinking, maybe Zombie U.
They didn't have Zombie U where I was.
They had Zombie U where I was, but I looked at IGN actually gave it a really bad review, but then subsequently really good reviews have come out.
It's really hard.
I still don't think it's for me.
It's not for you.
Yeah, it's not for me. And then there wasn't one other game that I wanted. I'm not going to get Assassin's Creed or Arkham Asylum for the Wii. I'm going to get it for the Xbox 360 or the systems.
Or the PC.
Or indeed the PC.
I mean, you've already played Arkham City on the PC at this point, theoretically. It came out 2 years ago. I think that their launch strategy is pretty good. I think if you hadn't been keeping up with games, like the core gamer, people like us, dudes who play games like just and play everything.
Yeah.
Are not interested in Mass Effect 3 or Arkham City or Assassin's Creed 3, probably. I think that's okay. I think with Zombie U, they have a really hardcore Dark Souls, Mega Man 2 style hard. It's good game.
I mean, now that the good reviews are out there, and I think some of it's really clever. I didn't know this one idea that, like, when you die, you really die and you just become another survivor.
It's almost like a roguelike.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And then if you want to get your stuff back, you go kill the guy that was you before.
Kill the zombie that you have now become. Yeah, that's great.
I think New Super Mario Brothers, I know the bomb guys have been kind of hard on it. I didn't play as much of the 3DS New Super Mario Brothers game, so maybe I'm a little further away from it.
I think it's terrific.
I think it's quite good. Yeah. And in a world where we didn't have New Super Mario Brothers, where we didn't have side-scrolling 2D Super Mario Brothers games for like 15 years, I am okay with them cranking those out as fast as they want.
Yeah, it's a great Mario game. Leah and I played a bunch as like Mario and Luigi. Yeah. It's actually harder when you play, because it's so easy to accidentally bounce off someone's head and kill them. Or
that's the fun of that game. That is chaotic.
It's hilarious and fun. But if you really want to play to win, that's not the way to play. But we also played some of the
The way to play, just to be clear, is using the gamepad where one person helps the other person.
Yeah, so we played the boost mode as well, which is where you can drop platforms and bonk enemies on the head to help the other person. Leah was being Mario and I was being the boosty person. And that's really fun as well.
I think that stuff's really interesting. I think the Miiverse stuff that hit 2 nights ago, it seems like they're rolling out updates to stuff.
A lot
constantly.
Of people seem to really like Miiverse.
I want to say,
isn't it just like a really basic message board? I mean, what am I missing about Miiverse?
Have you gotten the prompts when you're playing Mario Brothers that say, "Hey, do you want to share this accomplishment?
Do you want to post to Miiverse?" Yeah,
I think that's the interesting thing. Is it's kind of like you never played Dark Souls or Demon Souls, but that ability to leave notes in the world for other players that aren't in your multiplayer game or anything like that, but just say, hey, something hard's happening here, or you can also troll people
so if
with
you
that.
Played before, like, I could show, and you've played this level before, and you can say, as I'm about to play, there'll be a note from you saying, ooh, watch out, this level's really hard or something.
Okay. Or, like on Mario Brothers, if you complete a game without taking any damage, and a level without taking any damage, or do something that's, it's almost achievement-y, right? But it's not really, it's not universal and it's not at a system level.
Right.
It's just, hey, I did something awesome. Let me share it with my friends.
Yeah,
and then that person's me pops up on your map.
I like it. I think they're getting better at the social stuff. They're still not there. Like the simple act of sending and accepting friend requests is still really complicated.
Is it a code or what is it?
You can actually come up with a name and stuff, but like...
Both people have to put it in.
Yeah, well, if you do it a certain way, if you do it through Miiverse, then you actually do get the notification.
Oh, really?
The best way to send a friend request is to go to Miiverse, search for a player using their name, have their profile pop up, and send them a friend request.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a pain in the dick.
So I
walked out of the store only with Mario Brothers. I couldn't find another game
that's
that
what
I was confident
I did the same thing.
About buying. I thought, whatever. If something turns out to be good, I'll get it another day. Obviously, the black system comes with Nintendo Land as well, and I played a little bit around with Nintendo Land. That's the sort of thing that you need. I think Nintendo Land, what it sounds like is it's going to be successful in this for Wii U in the same way that Wii Sports was. In that, anyone can understand it. It's great with groups of non gamers. It's going to be a fun.
I don't know.
Thanksgiving, you're going to have all the Nintendo Land stories will come out. People, their aunts and uncles playing Nintendo Land, having a great time.
So,
but maybe not to the same degree. This is I think is the fundamental difference. Wii U is, and I love the fact, I've got a lot that I don't like about Wii U right now, and I think it's a system that could go either way. But I love the fact that Nintendo is the only company, again, doing something really, really different.
Or at least committing to it.
Yeah.
I mean, because everybody
out
else is going to have that smart glass and the kind of tablet nonsense.
Yeah, and, you know, the Wii Motion was a huge deal at the time. Sony and Microsoft both obviously copied it in their own way because Nintendo had done something truly new. And now they're doing something truly new again with this dual screen system. And whether or not it will work, I don't know. What I do suspect is that it's not going to have the same immediate appeal that the Wii Motion did, where anyone can pick up a Wii Mote and go, oh, I get it. I'm swinging a tennis racket.
Then that's the difference.
That's why it was huge.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is going to be the same.
The difference between Nintendo Land and Wii Sports is that with Wii Sports, you already understand how to bowl. You already understand how to play tennis.
Yeah.
Each of these Nintendo Land games have these fucking awful tutorials,
right,
where it's like, you do this to do this, and you hold up the thing, and you look around, like, and
now look at
shoot.
This screen. Now
and
look at that screen.
It's too like, much exposition for – too much explanation for dudes – sitting around with your grandmother in the living room at Thanksgiving, I think.
Yes, I agree.
It's going to be interesting to see. The other thing, though, is I think that there's a potential for this to actually be a kind of interesting core experience for core game people. Like, I think that the two screens is going to – when once people figure out what to do with that second screen, it could – they really cool games could come out of this.
I think it's a
$300 gamble, which I don't –
I think it's interesting. I think it's slightly different. There's a good and a bad reason why it's not like the Wii. The bad reason is you're not going to get that same aunt and uncle pick up the thing and swing a tennis racket accessibility. It's not going to take off with non-gamers the way that the Wii did. I think, though, that it's ultimately going to, as you say, actually be a gimmick. The problem with the Wii on the Motion Plus side was, while it was great for aunts and uncles and what have you, when it came to making games, developers eventually were like, I don't know what to fucking do with this thing. And it felt like they were shoehorning these ideas in. That's why we got a lot of shovelware.
Well, once they got the gyroscope in the controller with the Motion Plus, it changed that a little bit. Because you had games like Skyward, but it was at the end of the life cycle of the console. Skyward Sword ultimately is probably the only, and Wii Sports Resort were the only games that actually used that thing well.
Yeah.
At least that I played.
Yeah.
And I think that I think that launching with that, like, I think if they had launched a Wii Sports game with this console, I know they would have been eviscerated for doing the same thing over again in the press. But had they done that, it would have been a much better experience than the first one.
And here's the difference. I think that the Wii U, while not having that same accessibility, have a core, as you say, a core gameplay gimmick, which is much more interesting.
Yeah.
And I think that developers will be able to get much more out of it. The classic example that Penny Arcade and many others have talked about is Dungeons & Dragons, right?
Yeah.
So I'm the DM. I've got the gamepad screen. Only I see it. I control the game. And everyone else with their Wiimotes plays the game off the main screen. That's
imagine playing Left 4 Dead where you play the AI director.
Right.
I mean, that's awesome.
Right. There's all kinds of really exciting potential for group gaming with that system. Actually, on Nintendo Land, I want to play the Luigi Mansion ghost chasing game because I think that is a good demo.
Well, we'll go through all that stuff on Thursday.
Yeah, the ghost chasing one is the most similar one to like the demo we got last year.
But no, Chase Me is in there too.
Chase Me in.
Is it not in there?
I don't know.
I thought
so
it was.
Maybe it's better in the long run. The original Wii had a great, tremendous surge of activity among non-gamers. But then people just got bored of it, and it never really caught. There were never really any great games for the Wii, like in the last few years.
Skyward Sword's okay. Mario Galaxy 2 is amazing.
But that whole control mechanism, after all the excitement, it just kind of.
Do you think they need a Mario Galaxy that uses a second controller, or do they bring back Mario Galaxy and just have it in the high?
I'd be perfectly happy.
Well, it's Mario Galaxy 2 uses. You could have two people play because one person could collect stars.
Do that with the first one as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. So the thing that I realized on Sunday, so I woke up early on Sunday morning. I was like, oh, maybe I'll get up and go get a Wii, right?
Yeah.
And then I said, you know what I really want to do is play Super Mario Galaxy 2 in high def.
Yes.
And then I went to the Dolphin page, which is the Wii emulator, and I started going down that path. And I was like, well, this actually isn't that hard. So I put the Homebrew channel on my Wii, which took like 5 minutes, and an SD card.
Yeah.
Which then allows me to install a thing that lets me rip Wii discs onto that same SD card. And then you take the SD card in, plug it into your computer, and copy the ROM over. And you have Wii games running on Dolphin in the living room, on your computer.
Right.
Which, because my computer is hooked up to the TV, I just went back in the other room, used the sensor bar that's plugged into the Wii, and was playing high def Galaxy 2 in my living room off of the PC.
Welcome to, things that people have been doing for years.
No, I know. I mean, it's nothing new. But when I was thinking about buying a Wii U, I realized that's really what I wanted was the ability to play Mario games in high def.
And I think for the vast majority of people that aren't willing or able to go through all those steps, that you will see a lot of kind of HD remasters.
Oh, they're going
to
sell all of those over again.
So, look, if they bring out Super Mario Galaxy 1 and 2 HD collection, of course, I'm buying that shit.
The bummer for me on that stuff, though, is the Wii channel. There's no reason that the Wii channel couldn't have just been running in high def. Like if you run the Wii channel now, it drops you back down to 480p.
Yeah,
and
I would like if that had been an upscaled 1080p Wii channel, yeah, that would be great.
Or even 720, whatever.
Sell it to you again.
Well, right. Nintendo's really good at selling you the same games you've bought 10 times already.
You know, I've said it a million times, in the same way that as much as I used to like playing Wii games, I was constantly reminded of the fact that they were really low definition. It is wonderful to finally see these games in high def. Like Super Mario Brothers
looks great.
Looks fantastic.
And I also love the ability to play stuff on the tablet. Like the playing, like when Gina's watching something on the big TV and I have headphones plugged into the gamepad and I'm playing Super Mario Brothers, it is the best game. It's the best handheld I've ever used.
Oh, and also just for really simple things, like I had a bunch of friend requests or people that I wanted to send to people. So I want to start populating my friend list. Leah's watching TV, but I just pick up the gamepad, power up the Wii onto the gamepad screen, went into Miiverse, sent a bunch of friend requests, put it back, and never interrupted the TV at all because the whole system is running through that screen.
So how's your battery life been on the gamepad?
I haven't used it for an extensive enough period to really test it. I haven't gotten the low battery.
Seems like yet. 3 or 4 hours for me.
I think for like epic sessions, it's going to be a problem.
The thing I did was plugged in the power brick behind my chair, and then I could just plug the controller
there
in.
There you go.
But a lot of the games require
that
kind of weird movement on those things.
That cradle is nice, though.
The $50 for the cradle is almost worth it on itself.
Yeah.
The extra $50.
What's that little, just the plastic cradle thing that comes with it as well?
I think that's just a rest if you don't want to leave it, if you want to leave it plugged in but don't want to use the cradle.
Okay.
And then the other one is to put the Wii up on its side.
So I'm very mixed about Wii U right now. It's hard to predict because it is so different to anything that's been done before.
I
applaud Nintendo so, so much for doing something genuinely different for a second generation, really, really different. And I do think there is tremendous, more so than the Wii Motion gimmick, I think there's tremendous game design potential.
I think the launch lineup's pretty good. If you haven't been playing games in the last year, then the launch lineup's pretty awesome. Because you have Assassin's Creed it may not be the best Assassin's Creed ever.
Yeah,
but it's still a pretty good game.
And even little gimmicks, like when I was at New York Comic Con earlier this year, I moderated the panel for Alien versus Predator. Mm-hmm. Not Alien versus Predator, Colonial Marines.
Colonial Marines.
And somebody we were taking questions, and somebody said, "Are you going to do a Wii U version?" And they said, "Yeah, we don't know yet, probably." And I think maybe they said yes. They said we're looking at ways to use the Wii U. And
if that's the motion tracker,
I went motion tracker, and they went, yes." Things like that just easily fit into that paradigm.
And I hope that it doesn't end up being a party game platform like the Wii ended up kind of at the
end. I think there will certainly be a certain amount of party games.
Obviously.
I think there's much better potential for core games on this system than there was on the Wii.
Yeah, assuming the hardware can keep up. I didn't notice. I mean, I obviously wasn't playing games that would have frame rate problems, but I think I'm going to buy Zombie U, and I'm interested to see how that goes.
I mean, the problem is that on a technical side, I wonder if they're going to wind up being the Wii again because...
They're a generation behind.
They've basically now finally, at the end of this generation, achieved technical parity. And according to all the teardowns and the specs that are out there, it's basically on a par with the 360 and the PS3.
Really more the 360.
The problem is we're probably not much more than a year away from the next set of systems, which are going to be way ahead.
How much are those going to cost?
I don't know. Probably the same.
Well, Microsoft and Sony aren't afraid of losing money. Or at least Microsoft isn't.
And Sony's really good at it.
Yes. They're taking it out a whole new door. It's like once they fix the UI problems, the core UI problems, I think it's a much more compelling experience.
I think it's going to be the same as last gen in that Nintendo has a system that when you look at what's up on the screen, the Nintendo system is probably going to look some ways behind whatever Microsoft and Sony will be offering in the next generation. But as always, Nintendo is going to be the only place to get these unique types of games that you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah, I think that's the important thing because realistically, no one is going to make games that require smart glass to play on Xbox because not everybody has tablets.
And honestly, thank God for Nintendo because if they weren't there, what would your choice really be? The choice between 360 and PlayStation 3.
No, iOS.
There's so little to choose from.
It's iOS is a different experience, though. Having buttons and thumbsticks and stuff is important.
Yeah. You're talking about like big, you know, your classic console experience. You hook up to your TV. When someone says to me like 360 or PS3, it's a really, you have to go through a whole process with it to figure out what would be the best for them.
Do you play multiplayer? If yes, where are your friends? If no, it doesn't matter.
And also, and it comes down to a handful of game types.
First party exclusives. Yeah.
But technically, there's nothing, but no daylight between them.
Right. I mean, the PS, there are pros and cons to both on the technical side.
The only really differentiating points are, do you want Blu-ray? What's more important to you, Blu-ray or online multiplayer? Yeah. Because it's not just where your friends are. I think 360 still has a far better system for that, for multi, for friends.
Oh, yeah,
and
absolutely.
Social.
Well, I mean, but you also have to pay for it, which is a big negative in a lot of people's books.
That's also
true. I mean, so it is, and the 360 is probably technically inferior to the PS3, but it's also a lot easier to make games for,
well,
and the Unreal Engine works
on
it.
On paper
it
might be, but I don't see many PS3 games that look better than 360 games.
Well, the first party stuff is the stuff that looks better on PS3.
Like Uncharted, which is targeted straight at PS3 hardware.
Heavy Rain, those kinds of things.
Uncharted is probably the only game on PS3 that I can like say, yeah, I kind of would have a hard time seeing the 360 pulling this off. Because the Uncharted games look amazing.
Right. Well, and the problems that Unreal had with the Unreal Engine had with PS3 in the early part of the generation, and even like through games like Skyrim, the PS3 version of Skyrim was just fucking broken.
Yeah. So I love originality. I think originality and risk taking should always be rewarded. And I think what Nintendo is doing is just last gen markedly different from what anyone else is doing. And I hope it works. And I do believe that there is more potential for developers to really get behind this system.
That said, if you're making buying recommendations today, I think I would have a hard time recommending it based on the performance of the core. Like
for a regular Joe, I would not buy a Wii U today.
Yeah,
because there's not enough games out there to make it worth it yet.
Yeah, that's it. It's weird. They don't even have like a massive virtual console library in the store. I was expecting people to go and buy new, you know, old Wii games and
yeah, it really it's kind of crazy to me that the Wii shop stuff isn't all just in the eShop. Like,
I was
totally separate
stunned
shop
by that. And the virtual console stuff, apparently you have to boot into the Wii mode to play.
You do. Wow.
So that's all really weird.
Yeah, it sucks.
Let's talk about Tesla. Or you went for a Tesla.
Yeah, I don't
want to
spoil it. Tesla's awesome car.
Well, if you don't want to spoil it, why'd you put it on the list?
Just point out that
I now know two awesome people car who own a Tesla S.
Okay.
And I wish I was one of them.
Yeah. Are you on the list?
No.
You can't. If you order one now, you won't get it till next year.
It's about a year. It's 9 to 11 months waiting list.
Cut down as they go on.
They're building at pretty much max capacity right now.
I like to think that I would get a Tesla at some point, but it's probably like a couple of generations away.
I would wait until the charging stations are much more ubiquitous.
Yes.
There's only 6 of them in California.
Yeah,
that's not good.
But you get free charging. So it's a free trip to L.A.
Well, so
But I couldn't do that trip in one shot.
No, but the charging stations are, there are two between here and LA.
Oh, are there?
So it's a
But then how long does it take to charge a battery?
At the charging stations, an hour for the full battery.
So you go and have lunch.
I guess. Go to In-N-Out and top off.
I'm very excited about that. So Motor Trend car of the year, right? Tesla S?
It is.
Yeah, we talked about that last week.
Would you want to buy a Tesla, or do you want to see Tesla's, you know, a Toyota with Tesla batteries and Tesla motors?
I like the Tesla.
So you want the premium experience.
I don't know about that UI. I don't know why they didn't do a deal with Apple or Android just to get an Android.
I think it is Android, isn't it?
Is it like a forked Android?
Linux-based.
It looks very tablet-y, but it's clearly some kind of custom interface.
Yeah.
And I've heard that it's kind of a...
janky.
Yeah.
There's some...
I don't know why they didn't...
Big touch targets.
I don't know why they didn't just put Android in it.
No, I wouldn't want Android in it. I wouldn't have to... You have to download updates, but... I wouldn't want to have to rely on the same build a UI specific to your car.
So 6 charging stations, does that count the stuff like in the Metreon where you can pull into electric car charging, or
that's,
is
that count. Tesla
this is
branded
this is
Tesla,
Tesla supercharge.
Supercharge.
Okay. You want to talk about the yoga some?
We talked about it enough. We'll wait till a quick look. The laptop.
We're gonna shoot that next week or week after, I think. It'll be up before Christmas.
Week after.
Okay. I spent some time with 123D Design, which is Autodesk's free 3D CAD program. It's like their version of SketchUp, kind of. I think it's a little, it's less limited and more, it's less limited than free SketchUp, more limited than paid SketchUp, if that makes sense. But the neat thing about it is you can make something, and I did it all to mock up these shelves that I'm working on. And then I realized that you can actually print stuff from there. So you can export so you upload it to their web service thing, and then you can generate an STL file that you can just import into MakerWare, whatever your 3D printer software is. So I printed the pieces of the shelves that I'm designing so that I could put them all together in different ways and see how it works. And that is amazing. I mean, I've printed some stuff before using SketchUp, but it was always like a multi-stage process where you had to generate some stuff and then convert files, and then you had to end up with scale all jacked up or whatever. And this was quite good. So 123D Design, it's on the App Store if you're on a Mac. You can just download from their site if you're on Windows. And it's the equivalent of like Pixelmator to Photoshop as to CAD or Maya or something like that. Like, you can't do surfaces. You can do carve shapes. But with this, you can also draw sketches and then create models on top of that if you want to do that. It's pretty cool. I definitely recommend checking it out if you are into that whole thing.
Cool. And, or own a MakeBot.
Yeah. And if you have a 3D printer, it's even more useful. I think you can also, if you don't own a 3D printer, you can also print to their kind of service. There's a couple of services that they work with that'll let you actually create the things
shape
that you
ways or shape, something.
Kind of like that. Yeah. I also got this thing. It's a Meta Watch. Gary, you should be interested in this.
What is it?
It is. Remember the Pebble?
I mean, I've heard of it.
So
what is that, e-ink?
No, it's a. This is a weird LCD, I think. I can't remember. But it's basically a phone connected watch. It uses the new stuff that's in iOS 6 or Android. So it'll, if you text me, it pops up with the text message on the watch. You can
Does run, it vibrate.
It vibrates. Yeah. Somebody sent me an email last night and it vibrated like 3 times and it was really loud and obnoxious.
Did it go through Do Not Disturb?
I did, because it was somebody, when Adrian sent that email at like 11 o'clock, he's on the VIP list, which I think I'm contemplating demoting him if he's sending emails at 11
o'clock. Not 3 a.m. Yeah.
So you can run, there's a handful of apps that run, mostly it's like stuff like weather, phone battery, calendar, that kind of thing. You can control your MP3 player from it.
This is the Texas Instrument one?
This is, we quick looked the predecessor, the dev kit version of this last year. But this was on, what was it? It was on Kickstarter, right? The Meta Watch, that's where I got it.
How much was it?
$100 maybe, 150. I can't remember.
150.
I paid for it a long time ago, so it was free now. The interesting thing about it is that they beat the Pebble to market, and Pebble was the big massive success on Kickstarter. They pre-sold tons and tons of those. I am not convinced that the smartwatch is a thing that is of use. The way I want to do this, I want to use it for a couple of days, and I'm going to hand it off to you, and I want you to use it for a couple of days.
All right. How long is the charge?
Let's see. I've only charged it once. I charged it overnight. Phone battery is fully charged. It is, I don't remember how to get to the phone. 64% in 1 day. It does hit your phone battery pretty hard. Usually I end the day with my phone battery at about 60%, 65%, 55%, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. I was at 35 by the time I plugged it in last night.
$180.
$180. Okay. I think it was a little cheaper on the Kickstarter because they gave us a starter deal. But yeah,
it's kind of bulky.
It's real big. I mean, it's chunky. Yeah. It rides weird on your wrist. The blue color probably wasn't my first choice, but I didn't want to pay more to get one of the better colors. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. When there are apps that you can put the stuff you want on the screen, maybe I'd be more interested in it. I kind of like, so the way you, the screen is divided into quadrants. You can put, you can either have an app that fills the whole screen. So some apps have full screen modes. You can have quarters or halves, vertical or horizontal halves. I kind of like that stuff. Like last night, I was going to pick Gina up at the BART station, though, and it was dark. So it has to be, there's no backlight on it. So you have to hit the button to turn the light on, which is the top left corner button. And the font on the text message is so slow, so small, that the idea is that you glance at it, you see what you need to know, and then you put it back down. The font's so small that you have to kind of squint at it, and if it's dark, you have to keep pressing the light to turn the light on.
I like this screen, whatever this LCD kind of treatment.
It's like a shiny LCD.
Yeah, it's kind of shiny LCD. I like the concept, the Meta Watch thing, where you can just glance at whatever's going on. I like that too. This looks very cheap and plasticky to me.
It was cheap and plasticky. I mean, it's $150, and it's huge.
Yeah, it's light, not very good.
I saw a.
It's fine in the dark. It looks bad in the daylight.
I saw a tag. In a watch in a jeweler store that I liked the other day, and I was like, "Oh, that looks nice." And I wanted to ask the guy how much it was, and I walked out immediately.
You did?
Yeah.
This is right.
He didn't even get to finish the price. I just needed to hear the first two syllables.
How many numbers after the dot?
All I needed to hear was 5,000, and I left. He didn't even get the Zand part out.
Nope.
Yeah.
Did it have diamonds or anything? Or was it just an expensive ass watch?
It's just a really nice watch.
Okay, there you go. We also got the Kindle Fire 8.9 in. Using that. That is a very good experience.
Yeah.
They
got it right on the second try.
So Norm used the 7-inch, did the 7-inch mm-hmm. testing. I haven't spent a whole lot. I spent a little bit of time. Like
would you
10
really
minutes.
Get it over an iPad, though?
No. It's $400 instead of $500. Okay. That's the good one is $400.
Right.
I don't know. I haven't gotten that far into it yet. I haven't spent that much time.
I'll take
it.
A look at it before I leave.
It's like they fixed the problems with the first one. Whether that makes a compelling tablet experience, I don't know.
Okay.
And I guess that'll do it for what we've been testing. Anything else, Gary? Any kind of seen on TV crap?
You want to talk about games we've been playing separately, though, right?
Let's do that later. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's take a question or two and call it a show.
Emails?
Well, but we do the other one.
Emails.
Yeah, we don't do emails. We do
emails.
No.
Questions. Boom.
If you have a question for This Is Only a Test, the email address is podcast@tested.com. Keep it short, under a minute. 45 seconds is even better. And make sure it sounds okay. Also, if you have questions for Adam, we're going to do a question podcast with Still Untitled soon. So you can just email those in with text. We'll do dramatic readings of those and send them to the same address with the subject line questions for Adam or question for Adam, I guess. Here is our first question.
Hey, lads. David here. For some hometown trivia, my hometown, Malahide, is the same as the hometown of Adam Clayton and The Edge from U2. And also Brendan Gleeson lives here. So my question is that I would like a recommendation from you guys on what kind of graphics tablet to buy. My younger sister, she's 15, she's developing her skills as an artist, and she's actually quite good with pen and paper. But I feel like she'll need to learn how to use a graphics tablet now, sooner rather than later. So if you could recommend something there, because I have no clue about that whole industry. Maybe something on slightly the cheaper side because I am a broke student. So maybe something smaller or whatever. Also, would you rather be fully submerged in urine or crude oil for half an hour? The rules are that you will not die from inhalation of fumes or whatever. It's purely which would you prefer?
All right.
I don't think about graphics tablets either. I know that Wacom is a thing.
Yeah. Brendan Gleeson's awesome.
Yeah, I like Brendan Gleeson.
Oil, crude oil.
Oh, I'd take the urine. Crude oil is super carcinogenic.
Flip a coin.
You're not going to die or be affected by it.
Neither of them really.
Both of those sound pretty awful. Like I think
both are awful.
I think. Well, it could come from an animal because you'd have full freedom of movement. I think oil is much more thicker and viscous. You'd feel more confined.
If it's 30 minutes. Close
is
your
the
eyes,
oil body temperature?
Out. I don't know.
I think you could probably float on the surface of the oil.
Submerged.
But, I don't think you could submerge. I think you'd have to weight yourself to submerge. Yeah. That would be really scary.
Yeah.
I'd go with the urine. Total. Full submersion? Are we wearing like a breath mask or something?
Probably full submersion.
Think of how hard it would be to get the oil off of you. The urine, at least you can just wash off. Hop in the shower. It's all water soluble. Soap up real good.
You know what I don't think scrub I could do? Clean. Remember when those Chilean miners got rescued and they went up in that little torpedo tube?
The death tube, yeah.
Oh my God, that would have been terrifying.
Can you imagine how awesome it would be to get in that tube after you've been underground for 30 days?
I would. Every single person that I brought up, I would have stopped it halfway up just for 30
You're
seconds.
Such an asshole.
Just for hoots.
Oh my God.
No.
Like make some crackling noises.
Because I mean, it took. I mean, what was it like? It took
like
10 minutes
to 20 minutes. Yeah.
What a 10 minutes that's got to be.
When somebody rode up and down with them each time, right?
They had to bring a guy down first. Imagine being that guy.
Well, he went down to evaluate the health of the guys.
But I think they. I'm pretty sure they must have sent that thing up and down. Just waited first, right? Just to see that
it
would go up and down the tube, the doors would open. Fully put a real person in.
Yeah, and they sent the doctor down to make sure that they'd fit. Like they figured out how they were going to get them out, they had to have calisthenics and stuff they'd lose weight. The fat guys.
If you remember, they definitely did bring stuff because they did it as almost like a media surprise that when the guy came down, they already had set up camera gear. They presumably brought camera gear down there and the miners had set it up so that they could have live video.
Or they sent it down they had a smaller hole that they could send food and
stuff.
That's true.
They had a secondary hole that equipment was going down.
Yeah, living like down that mine though.
That was an amazing story.
There's a movie being made about that, right? Yeah.
Just an engineering and triumph of heroism.
Human spirit.
I want to see the David Fincher version of that movie.
But all I know is like being in that tube for like 10 minutes, just terrifying.
Longest 10 minutes of your life.
Oh yeah, awful.
The Wacom bamboo stuff seems to be the consensus. We tested one of those like 2 years ago. They are relatively inexpensive, like under $100.
They don't have a screen.
They do not have a screen. That's fine, but they're pressure sensitive tablets that you can use a stylus with, Photoshop, and a couple of other applications. The thing I would say is figure out what application she uses for drawing, and then make sure that the tablet you buy supports that. But the Wacom
pressure sensitivity.
Pressure sensitivity is super important. Having a two-sided pen is good. Now, the levels of pressure sensitivity are where it gets expensive. So you can have like 10,000 or 500 or 128. If you're starting out and you're going to buy something inexpensive, then you're probably not going to get, like, that's where you're going to make the sacrifice, and in the actual size of the writing area.
Yeah. Just find out what Gabe uses at Penny Arcade. I mean, that's probably
he uses a Wacom Cintiq. Is the last time
and
I saw
that. I'm sure that's a very high end one.
The screen,
yeah. So that's what that is a pressure sensitive drawing area on top of a LCD screen.
Right. So he's not drawing onto a tablet and seeing it up here on his monitor. He's actually drawing onto like a live digital easel.
Yeah, it like sits down below him, like you would want your touchscreen PC to work.
Right.
But the thing you want to avoid is the typical capacitive touchscreen that works with your fingers, because those are not going to have the pressure sensitivity and the resolution that you want for drawing.
Right.
That does it for questions this week. We only had one that I saw this week. So I guess that'll do it for us. Walking Dead Episode 5 is out today.
Yeah, well, it was out yesterday on PlayStation. Today it's out on all formats. It's out on PSN, Xbox Live.
Is it a Mac? Is there a Mac version now, too?
Yeah, on Steam.
Was there a...
Well, a bunch of different places. PC and Mac is out today. And you can actually get an amazing deal on it on at Steam.
It's
right
$15
now.
$15, yeah.
$12.49.
Ooh, wow, even better.
Steam the entire series?
50% off for the whole series. That's an amazing value.
Fantastic.
And even iOS is out today as well.
Oh,
so,
awesome.
They got all the versions out on the same day. And so
right
far,
before Thanksgiving.
So far, the reviews and the reactions have been very, very good.
I don't know when I'm going to have time to play, but I'm really looking forward to it because everybody seems to have really nice things to say.
Strong ending.
I don't know. I've seen a lot of, I don't know how you're going to follow this up for the second seasons.
That's a discussion that is going to have to be had at some point, yes.
Yes. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone, and we'll be back next week with another episode of the show. And if you're not in America, we're not going to have anything on the site tomorrow and Friday, so good luck.
Site's going to go shut down.
Yeah, we're going to go take a break.
Going dark. 504
error.
Sitting around.
Yeah, we're just turning it off.
Sitting around on couches, complaining about overeating and playing Super Mario Brothers. Mm. What could be better?
And then Monday.
Surely that is what the Pilgrim Fathers intended.
I'm going to give you a sneak peek into what is coming up on the site on Monday. There is high speed camera and pudding cups. That's all I'm going to say.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
I like
so
pudding cups.
We will see you guys next week. Today's outro comes from Fink. I haven't listened to this one, so I hope it's not super offensive, but it features Gary.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
Test it.
Yeah, I
monster.
I don't know what that was.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember. It's something about Cookie Monster. Let's talk about video games.
Yeah, we've been playing. I've finally been catching up with some video games, and still behind. Again, as always, the problem, of course, this time of year is all the best games.
Boom, boom, boom,
come
boom,
out
boom.
For the Halo holiday
4,
period. You end up with
Assassin's
a backlog.
Creed.
This week was a big
Creed
week for
3.
PC.
I've been waiting for the PC version that just came out on Steam yesterday, so I haven't played it yet. I still haven't played Dishonored.
Yeah.
I still haven't played XCOM.
That's your big mistake.
Hitman Absolution, I just downloaded yesterday. I might enjoy that.
Did you like the other Hitman games? They seem like they might be a little bit tedious for you.
I'm going to try this new one. This new one's got some good reviews, so I'll try this new one.
The last one is one of my favorite games of the last generation.
All right, well, I'll give it a try.
Really good.
But I just spent the last few days playing Black Ops 2 and loving it.
COD Blops 2?
COD Blops.
Well, if you want to get something out of the way, low-hanging fruit, COD Blops is definitely
like 4 hours. I really like what they did with the campaign. Like, I've been outspoken as not liking the campaigns of the Modern Warfare of the last couple of COD games.
Yeah.
And I think that the kind of... I feel like I have agency in that game in a way that I haven't in a long time.
I like them
really?
All. I love the fact
just a little
always,
bit.
I love the
that's
fact
all you
that
need.
Modern Warfare
just
and the Black Ops
little bit of non hallways.
They've always
it's a window.
They've always had these crazy over the top storylines, like Russians invading New York City.
That's the part I don't like.
Insane. I love all that madness. Well, then you might not like.
I'm not going to like the end of this.
You might not like where Blops 2 goes because it's on that level of madness.
At least it's in the future. Like, I'm okay with it if it's in the future.
I like it's a nice combination of like the old Blops kind of 70s and 80s stuff and the futuristic 2025 stuff.
The thing that they did really well, the thing that I like this time is that I actually care about the characters in a way that I haven't in a COD game in a long time.
Yeah, it's
really
good.
You didn't care about Soap?
Soap is the only guy I cared about.
I love Soap.
But I didn't care.
You don't like Sergeant Price?
I didn't care about Soap and Price enough to play the third Modern Warfare game.
Oh, I love the third. The third Modern Warfare game was great.
I hated the second one.
I liked the well,
when they invade America and all that nonsense.
It was all that fun.
Oh, it's
Ramirez,
so
secure that Burger Town. So good.
So okay, you finished it. Let me ask you a couple questions. Yeah. At the end, is there like a Mexican standoff where somebody throws a gun to you or a knife or something? You have to shoot the bad guy just at the last second to save the world.
There is something like that.
Do you jump into the back of any helicopters just as something is exploding behind you?
Everything that was in Modern Warfare 1.
All those things have been in all of these games.
There is a high frequency of jumping out of things right as they explode, which
or
is great.
Into things right as they explode.
Right. Is there like a last minute getaway into a truck or helicopter?
There's a Halo drop at the end, which is pretty crazy.
I guess we should have warned people that there's going to be maybe slight spoilers. I don't think
I'm not going to try to spoil too much.
Okay.
But
I think this is worth playing.
I won't play the multiplayer because I can't survive in those games. Those games aren't noob friendly. The Modern Warfare COD guys are too good for me. But I do like the campaign. It's relatively short. It's good story. Completely over the top. You got to suspend your disbelief, but it's fun.
Have you played multiplayer Norm on this yet or no?
Not new one?
Yeah. I might play some Nuketown because I liked Nuketown on the previous Blobs.
Yeah. You just have to resign yourself.
Spend all this time in the game so everyone plays the same old map over again.
Yeah.
They paid $60.
When you play multiplayer Call of Duty, you have to just resign yourself to dying a lot. And the goal is to kill one guy each time you die.
It's not fun for me. I like story. I like narrative. And again, even though they're very silly and outrageous, I like those storylines. And I think Blops 2 has the best campaign story mode of all the Call of Duty games so far.
At least, really. Well, I really like the first couple, but I feel like since Modern Warfare, it's the best one by far.
It's a little bit controversial in the way they've woven like real historical figures into the storyline.
They did that last time though, too, didn't they?
Yeah, but the way they do it in this new one's a little more so.
Oh.
You'll see. You'll get that.
I tried to kill Manuel Noriega, and it wouldn't let me. I like shot him, and he was invincible. I was sad.
Yeah, they won't let you kill Noriega.
I feel like you should be able to kill Noriega.
It's interesting to see David Petraeus in there.
Oh, really? I haven't gotten that far yet.
Interesting to see Colonel Oliver North. Like, all these great figures from American infamy are in there.
Huh.
And again, there's two missions, both in the 2025 storyline towards the end. One on an aircraft carrier, one in L.A., which are – the L.A. one in particular is fucking insane, and I loved every minute of it.
Yeah.
I enjoy that immensely.
So you finished that. Your question is what to play next.
Yeah.
Have you finished Halo 4?
I'm still working on Halo 4.
It's pretty short.
It'll be done by the Thanksgiving holiday.
Yeah.
And I also want to play the Spartan Ops because I'll
play Spartan Ops with you.
Yeah, let's play Spartan Ops because I don't want to do it. I can't do it until I finish the campaign because I think Spartan Ops might.
It doesn't spoil anything. I played most of the first one. I mean, you see some they play it on some of the maps that show up later in the game, but nothing gets spoiled.
Let's try and do some. I'm gonna finish up the campaign by the weekend, and we'll do some Spartan Ops. Yeah.
Have your people call my people.
And then I think next I've really got to do XCOM.
XCOM is the best game of the year so far. I think not really. It's the kind of thing that you can sit down and play for 20 minutes. It's turn-based, so if you need to get up and take care of the baby, you can.
So how long to get the whole experience?
It is as long as you want that campaign to be. The way the campaign is structured, there are campaign missions where the mission is to go in and kill all the aliens and rescue the humans or whatever. And then there's overarching story beats that only trigger when you do certain things inside the missions. So if you don't, if the scientist lady tells you to go do something and you don't get it done in the first mission, no bigs, you can do it on the next mission. The difficulty is going to ramp up as you progress down the tech tree, but you aren't punished if you don't hit those story missions until a certain point.
And by the way, just go back to Blops. That's actually what I really liked. I love that they added that choice mechanism into.
It's not even really a choice mechanism because you a lot of time you don't know that you're doing something.
Right, but there are the story branches, and there are different versions of the story than the previous one.
How different?
I've only seen my ending. But
from talking to Jeff,
it sounds like the endings can be pretty different.
So I talked to Jeff about this because I was really curious. Like there are situations where a guy can get away. And if he shows up later in a later mission, that mission will be maybe more difficult, or something changes about the later mission.
I
regret it. There are a couple of choices that are very, very clear.
And
one at the very end, and I actually regret the choice that I made. I may rewind that last mission and do it differently.
So one of the things that happens is It'll present you with a different kind of. If you miss an objective, you'll have to do another mission to make up for that, and then you can fail that mission. So if you fail that, then it'll be more difficult later. Something will change later. You'll get a worse outcome. The side missions, the makeup missions, I don't like at all. Maybe that I don't understand how to do them right, or they don't work well with the gamepad.
I'm not a huge fan of that.
The Strike Force missions are kind of crappy.
The RTS element they added, it's cool that they did something new,
yeah,
but I didn't love it. Oh, there's also a mission, another 2025 mission that's on. I can't spoil it.
Okay.
When you get to the Colossus,
things will be cool.
You'll appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay.
It's really cool.
You should play XCOM.
I'm going to play XCOM, and then I don't know what after that.
So Dishonored's pretty good. The art in Dishonored's really gorgeous. I think the game is kind of.
Yeah.
So play Assassin's Creed instead of Dishonored or Hitman?
I haven't played Assassin's Creed yet.
I will work my way through all of these.
I want to play Assassin's Creed and Hitman. And Scribblenauts came out yesterday, too. And it's all Steam community connected, so people can build shit, I think, and put it in the game.
Apparently the Wii U version of Scribblenauts is very good.
I don't want to pay $60 for Scribblenauts. It's $15 on Steam.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah.
And I still, God, there's so many other things that I haven't even played yet. I don't know how I'm going to do it. Is it all these great indie games out there I haven't looked at yet?
Did you play Fez?
No.
You should play
Fez.
And
I have it, too. I downloaded it. I haven't played it.
Did you play Mark of the Ninja?
Same story.
Mark of the Ninja is amazing. Yeah. Mark of the Ninja, I think Dishonored is not as good as it is because I played Mark of the Ninja first, and 2D stealth versus 3D stealth is dramatically easier. I understand that, but it is such the perfect stealth game that I think even if you don't like stealth games, you'll like Mark of the Ninja.
Yeah, I've got it on Steam. I'm definitely going to play it.
It's a good living room game too. You can play it with your gamepad.
Okay.
What else? You got to play XCOM. Definitely
yeah, that's the next one. Now that I'm done with Blops, I'm going to finish up Halo. I'm pretty close to finishing up Halo 4.
Is that this year's Skyrim?
Blops?
No, XCOM.
You mean in for Game of the Year?
No, like everyone needs to play it, but also it takes as long as you want to spend in it.
It's a in that sense, yes. It's not at all an exploration-y game. Like XCOM is almost like a roguelike. So it's almost like you start a game, the game is your life, is one life in a roguelike, and the goal is to do the best you can on that lap of the game. Like that's the way I've been playing XCOM. And because of the way the game works, as long as you save between missions, you can kind of put it down and come back whenever you want, and it's still just as good. Like you're telling the story of your XCOM dude saving the world from the alien menace. FTL is amazing. If you haven't played that, it's a kind of space roguelike.
I played FTL.
Spelunky, I think, is on sale on Xbox Live today for half price. It's awesome, but probably not for you, Gary. It's a little hard.
Yeah, I like easy games.
What difficulty play COD Blops in?
Recruit. I play everything on easy.
Yeah,
because I don't have the time.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I've started doing that for things that aren't, like, I didn't play Dishonored on easy because it's a stealth game and I wanted to kind of force myself to not just kill everyone.
Yeah.
It's opposite of the Jeff Greenway.
He plays everything on hard?
He wants to play everything for the actual shooting part, for the actual gameplay.
No, I'm the opposite.
Not the story.
Opposite.
Hmm.
Well, I can get challenged playing real people online, and that challenge is more interesting to me.
There you go.
Than trying to figure out an AI.
I want more Mass Effect 3 multiplier without all the bad micro.
By the way, I sent you a game in Letterpress, and you never got back to me.
So I made a mistake with Letterpress, and I asked people on Twitter if they wanted to play Letterpress with me, and I basically ruined Letterpress for myself.
Yeah.
I have too many games. I have like 35 or 40 games.
And I think I've also discovered, not a fatal, but there's a design flaw to it, where it all basically comes down to not wanting to be the second from last person to move.
The important thing is being strategic about keeping a word. Like if you can be the last move, being the last move is always good, obviously.
Right.
So the trick is to make sure that the last two or three tiles are like F, J, and V or something that there's no words.
And you don't want to use one of those tiles and let the other person come in and lose the last two because it will swing back to them. Yeah, it's a problem.
I had one game that went probably 65 or 70 turns because we were just nobody would hit the last two tiles because it was like C and Z and Q. And there were no U's on the board.
Yeah, it's also a bummer that when it gives you a Q, it doesn't also throw a U in.
To be fair, there are like 25 words in the Scrabble dictionary that have Q but no U that are completely legal to use.
Yes.
You just have to know what those words are.
But you should feel bad if you use them.
I don't feel bad for using those.
QI.
That's why I stopped Words with Friends. People playing QI all fucking day.
Yeah, QI is bullshit and Words for Friends.
But yeah, a lot people are saying this is a weak year for games, but I don't think we'd be having this conversation if it was.
Here's the thing is, I think that there's fewer games overall, but the high points are still as high as they have been. Like XCOM and the Fez and Mark of the Ninja are amazing.
The big end-of-year games delivered, right? Assassin's Creed 3 seems like people like it. Halo 4 clearly delivered. Blops definitely delivered for me, at least. And then, you know, there's a Journey. Oh, my God, that's the best game I've played. That's probably going to be, you know, obviously, bias aside, that's my game of the year.
Well, you can't make Walking Dead game of your game.
I'm conflicted. By the way, it's very nice to see that other people are putting it in contention.
It is. I have seen that a lot.
That's very great. We've got two official.
It's one of my favorite games of the year.
We have two official game of the year nominations so far, and I think there will be more to come. For me, Journey is my game of the year.
I think,
and I would love to see a downloadable game win it and cross that.
Well, this year of my five or ten favorite games, two or three of them are downloadable.
Fez,
Journey, Mark of the Ninja. Spelunky is high on that list. I don't think it'd make top five, but it's real good.
Right. So I'd like to see that happen.
The other thing that we didn't get this year is last year we had kind of an embarrassment of riches with open world games because we had Skyrim and Saints Row the Third and Assassin's Creed Revelations wasn't actually that good.
Yeah.
I spent as much time playing Saints Row the Third and Skyrim as I spent playing everything else so far this
year. My game of the year last year was a tie, I believe, between Saints Row the Third and Portal 2.
Oh, Portal 2 is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That ending. Whew.
Yeah. And I think...
Who would have thought? The moon.
I'm in space.
Yeah.
I think this year it's going to be Journey. I can't think of anything that would beat it. Mm. And I love Blops. Like, I really enjoyed that.
Fez might hit you in the right way. Fez either hits you in the right way or it doesn't.
Yeah,
it's a little puzzly for you, maybe.
Yeah,
Mark I just
you know, for me these
good.
Days, I'm more about like games as kind of emotional experiences. And Journey for me delivered just so much on that idea.
Yeah,
meet Genova Chen.
Oh,
the
really?
Other day. I was a little bit starstruck to meet him.
Did you not know him from before?
Never met him before.
Oh, interesting.
I was in LA and I got to have lunch with him.
What did he do before? Because he did Flow, right? Was the first thing that they did.
And then Flower, and then...
And then, what did he do before that? Was that his first thing?
I'm not sure what he did before that.
Huh.
And I think it's a very good year in prospect for games as well. Really excited about The Last of Us. It's probably my most anticipated game right now.
Yeah, I think...
GTA?
GTA 5, actually tied now that you mention it.
Three storylines. I'm excited about that.
Yeah,
that'll
GTA
fix a lot of my problems with
like
GTA.
A lot of fun. Love the GTA games. I'm going to play the hell out of that.
I'm excited about Last of Us because it fixes a lot of the things I don't like about Uncharted. It seems like that setting and the choices they've made.
Yeah, it looks terrific. Again, I'm a little bit tired of post-apocalyptic scenarios at this point, but you know, it seems like they've got a good take on it.
Gary Whitta, Book of Eli. I'm a little tired of post-apocalyptic scenarios.
Well, I mean, people wonder why I don't just want to play Zombie U either. I mean, I can probably last thing I need right now is fucking zombies in my leisure time. The last thing.
You've been walking around like a zombie for the last 4 months. You don't need any more zombies.
Yeah, exactly.
We had something else we were going to talk about too. I don't remember what it was.
We were going to talk about Hostess.
Oh, right. Twinkies.
Let's talk about it. I did go out and buy.
You made a mistake.
A lot of Hostess products. Well, that's a mistake anytime.
Yeah.
But there were people in line seeing all these Hostess products going, why are you buying all these? I said, because they're going out of business. And they ran back and started clearing out the rest of what was back there.
But didn't they do an about face? Aren't they back in business now because sales were so good this week?
The products were never going to go away. Somebody would have bought those brands.
Yeah, Dolly Madison.
But it sounds like, obviously it was a huge shame for all the employees, but it sounds like they are maybe going to work it out now after all. So,
well, the shit side of that story is that the executives have been giving themselves raises while they were negotiating pay cuts to the workers, and that's horseshit.
And a long succession of CEOs that had no experience or knew anything about baking. It's probably not a good idea.
Buy equipment. And
Somebody told me, or it was one of the things that's going around the internet, that, again, it would have been no great loss in terms of the brands for a couple of reasons. First of all, as it turns out, Little Debbie make all this stuff as well. If you want...
Very similar.
And better.
Yeah.
Like their versions of Twinkies, which are called Cloud Cakes, are superior.
Except for
and
the
honestly,
name.
I went out and so we bought... I bought some stuff and Leah had a Twinkie. She's like, this is horrible. It's like, what? Why do we care if this stuff goes away? This stuff, it's not even good. Like on the weekends, I'm still on my low carb diet. I'm still, you know, keeping the weight off. I don't just eat what I want when I want. But on the weekends, if I want a bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch for breakfast, fuck it, I'm having it. I allow myself.
Right on.
But if I'm going to cheat, at least make it. Why would you eat something that's not even good?
So
I have a really nice piece of cake or a really tasty donut. I don't know why.
That's why Zombieland, that thing, just didn't resonate. The Twinkie thing.
Well, but some people genuinely like them, but they're not really that good.
So the thing for me, the thing that I've realized is I have become more aware of what I eat is exactly what you said. I am all for eating something that's awesome and bad for you.
It's got to be worth it.
But if I'm going to eat something that's really fucking terrible for me, it had better be amazing.
My local market has a bakery that has like a deluxe kind of chocolate mousse tart thing.
Yeah.
It's so good that I don't care how bad it is.
Arismendi or the other one?
It's actually Andronico's.
Oh.
There's a bakery that has a pie milkshake.
And even even in the hostess world, like their orange cupcakes, I like those. Their cupcakes are all right, but again, if you're gonna have a cupcake, get a really good one.
Well, the other thing I found is that like
they want it cheap. That's why people go to McDonald's.
So I went on a candy kick at Halloween because those fucking kids didn't come take enough candy from us.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of candy, if you take one thing from this podcast. One thing, take this. There is a new. Remember how we ranked the M&Ms the other day?
Yeah.
And we said it was like milk chocolate on the bottom. Pretzel was the king.
Yeah.
There's a new king in town.
Wait, what?
New king in town.
What is it?
It's a seasonal flavor. I don't think it can stick around, but for the holidays, white chocolate peppermint M&Ms.
Wrong.
Are the shit.
White chocolate is bad. Universally awful.
Wrong. That is so wrong. White chocolate is the best chocolate.
Garbage. It's not even chocolate. It's cocoa butter.
If you tried these, you'd be like, okay, I'm wrong.
Peppermint and white chocolate
peppermint. Too
strong. So it's like peppermint bark, basically, but inside an M&M shell.
Try them, and I guarantee pretzel M&Ms are still great. These are better.
The thing I realized after Halloween was, after I ate about 50 million Twixes, is I would rather have like a tiny bite of some really awesome dark chocolate than a fucking five Twixes.
But Twix is good.
Twix is the best of the shit candy.
Yeah.
Yeah, just no to be question. Clear.
I don't think it's shit candy.
I would put Butterfinger up there.
No. Butterfinger gets in your teeth too much.
Mm.
Rolos are pretty strong.
I like a Rolo.
Yeah. Like caramel.
I don't like caramel.
But you like Twix. Do you like peanut butter Twix?
Nope.
But yeah, so Leah likes the powdered donuts.
The donuts.
But again, if you're going to get a donut, go to a donut. Like even
go to Krispy Kreme.
Even good donuts aren't that expensive.
Go to a pink box place.
Fucking A.
Yeah, I like the pink box.
I even like the ghetto like donut world place down the street from me has really good donuts.
That place is not bad. It's just a donut shop. Yeah. There's a lot of cops there all the time.
Yeah, though. But it's just like the Hostess donuts are just not good. Ho-Hos are all right.
Are Ho-Hos the black cupcakes with the swirl on top,
no,
the squiggle?
They're like the roll.
I've never had those before.
Cream in the middle.
Yeah, cream in the middle of a black chocolate roll.
Do you remember the Twinkie box from the old whiskey office?
Yeah, somebody sent you a lot of Twinkies.
I had never had a Twinkie before that, I don't think.
Yeah.
And that box lived between Jeff and my desk about 6 feet back. And it was an incredibly damaging experience to have that kind of
ready. Yeah, you don't want that
Twinkies.
Many Twinkies on hand.
Because it was essentially like 2,000 Twinkies might as well be infinite Twinkies.
So immediately after I bought all those Hostess products, I'm like, what are we going to do with all these? Turns out they do actually have expiration dates.
Yeah.
So we've been giving them to anyone who comes over. When Darren came over to pick up that Wii U, the extra Wii U that I had, he also walked out with like a bunch of Twinkies.
Have a Wii U, take some Twinkies home.
Yeah.
Did you know there's a high school teacher who bought a Twinkie, a two-pack of Twinkies like 20 years ago?
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, put it on top of his like the speaker and his thing to see if they ever go bad. And he just retired. So he's passed that on to another teacher who was in the first class of students when he bought the original Twinkie.
Yeah. It's an urban myth. They do go bad. They're good for about 25 days.
It turned really green and super gross.
Yeah.
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 So, yeah. Sorry. Sorry, Woody.
I'm so hungry that even a Twinkie sounds good to me right now.
We'll see you guys next week. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yes, everyone have a happy Thanksgiving.
And if you're not in America, well, have a nice Thursday.